friends, I don't know if you've heard the news, but it is on. It's on.
It's on.
Sportsnet.
On. Matthew Dumba, they really got he delivered on that read.
Yeah, no, well done by you know what, everybody. There's not a weak link in the chain, I would say. Everybody killing it in that commercial. Are we going to continue to see that the entire season? Because it will still be on.
No.
Is that have we reached the end of it's on? Is today the last day? It's like,
no.
Who was it? Brady Quinn wished us a happy new year on Monday. I think we've kind of reached our statute of limitations on that. Where is the end of it's on? I think you get until Friday this week to say it's on.
Don't you always feel like such a jerk when people wish you Happy New Year and you don't do it to them, but it's January, I don't know, 10th? You're like, whatever, right, sorry. And then they hit you with it.
My youngest son just stopped saying Merry Christmas 3 days ago.
Nice. He must be devastated to learn that you kept trying to basically drill down that Christmas was over for him. He's like, your youngest son is a repeater. It's cute, but he's like, he will repeat. And like one day when in the summer, when you and I were hanging out with him, I think he said the words take off to me.
Yeah.
Maybe 180 times within the span of 30 minutes.
To clarify, he's not just like, he probably also wanted you to leave. Yeah, but he also wanted you to leave, but that was not, that was subtext to what he was saying. He was talking about his toy airplane. But also,
but he would just stare you down. Just stare you down, hold his airplane in his hand, and say, take off. No, 150 times easily, like very, very easily. So hey, I can only imagine him coming to you every day. It's on. Or Christmas, Daddy. Christmas.
No, he would say Merry Christmas. He'd say Merry Christmas, Daddy. I'm like,
wake up, everybody.
Thank you.
That's actually pretty sweet. That's pretty sweet.
I know. Because I couldn't tell him to stop. I'm like, all right, you want to say Merry Christmas? Sure. It's kind of Christmas time.
Much like him, that's how I woke up feeling this morning. Very Merry Christmassy mood, you know? Yeah. Woke up with a little special tingle, little nice feeling in the air. Woke up feeling optimistic and happy and also kind of laughing at myself all at the same time because the Toronto Maple Leafs played tonight. And there's been basically no buildup. We've had articles and we've done shows and we've talked to people and we saw a blue and white scrimmage that people actually had takeaways from and whatever. But this is it. All of a sudden you're just going to have a real regular season game and there's not a ton of them and it's right up against, what I think is going to finally become a real rival. I was talking to you on the phone last night about how, dude, the Leafs and the Habs in my like adult life as a fan of this team had one moment, and I want to say it was 06, but I could be wrong on the year, where they played the Canadiens last game of the season and the Habs could have knocked the Leafs out of the playoffs with a loss. Leafs win and then they need to wait on the results of a Devils Islanders game, which of course goes against them. It's the Wade Dublowitz game, but that was it. That was like the last time there was something. And there have been moments where they've had good series back and forth. There, of course, was Colton Orr and who was it that he punched out? Bork, where it was just they had the beatdown game, the home game. That was really fun. There's been moments.
It's always been special, like Saturday night.
Right.
You see the two uniforms, right?
Of course.
That didn't change.
No, Saturday night, the two uniforms, you're right. And the little feeling, the vibe between you and your friends, because I think that there are more of those two fan base. There's more of those two fans than any other base in Canada. It's just, it's unassailable. There's more fans of the Canadiens and Leafs than any other fans in the NHL. And it's fun. It's fun. But it hasn't been a rivalry. And here there actually is because, and we'll talk about this a little later, but it really does feel like every fan base has a different sense of optimism that even Sens fans are looking at this saying, why can't we do this? Why can't we get in? We actually made a couple of sneaky moves, and what if Matt Murray gets hot, and what if the Stepan trade works out? Everyone has optimism today, and it's got me feeling pretty good about it. The NBA has been, I gotta say, largely a disappointment to start this season. Ooh. I've got a little bit of caution when looking at the potential for what could happen with this NHL regular season, especially with the games so packedly tight in, right, or so tightly packed in, where, ooh, you have a delay like this where you start adding up weeks of teams testing positive, like, say, the Boston Celtics, who have missed three games in a row now. And I don't know what it does to the year, but I feel like this league can learn from its counterpart. I feel like having a Canadian division, maybe, I don't want to give it a false sense of security, but is more likely to be able to persevere through this. And I just think the format, the length, the amount of games, it's just really exciting. It looks, on paper, this looks amazing. Like I'm not really going to get down on it today.
No. And why would you? I mean, come on. It's on. It's day one.
It's on.
And I have the schedule out in front of me, and it looks glorious. And I can't wait to see what it feels like to play essentially playoff series in the middle of these seasons. Because one, the season is so short, and yes, four of the seven teams do make it, but like you said, there's reason for optimism in all these groups, and we know that even in the course of a normal 82-game NHL season with three-point games and everything, weird stuff happens and teams get tightly packed, and the idea of the Leafs running away with this thing in a short sprint to the finish, I think it's possible. I don't even know if it's necessarily likely, but yeah, you don't think that early February, three straight games against the Vancouver Canucks at Scotiabank Arena aren't going to feel super important? Because I think it will. And we already know how that fan base feels about this organization, about this team, that they view them as rivals, even though it's not reciprocal that way, that the Leafs are the big boy, the big brother in this relationship with all these six other Canadian franchises. I have an idea of how it's going to feel. I can't wait to actually feel it, to see if it actually matches what my expectation is. Are you connected? You're muted. Oh, no, you're not connected.
Yeah, I think hockey has a very big advantage here. I'm very excited about the hockey season in comparison to the NBA for this reason. With the NBA, you and I have talked about the start, and I know that sometimes we compare the two sports with far too much frequency, but it actually really does feel like hockey is in the lead here with the way that they're going about things for the first time in a long time. I think that the sport is just more conducive to having intensity and having guys show up for regular season games. The shortened schedule is going to help, because when we went into the pandemic and we went into the bubbles and we went into the playoffs, I mentioned just like aesthetically, the NBA looked so much better because you don't see as many fans. You don't see the crowd and the shots the same way. The environment is not quite the same. You can pump in audio. It doesn't feel as weird because it plays music throughout a basketball game. The way they staggered the benches and showed the way that the players were interacting, it felt better. It felt more like playoffs. I feel like for a regular season anyways, hockey is going to have a big advantage. But I'm a little, that's the only thing I'm a little scared of, is the still no fans atmosphere. The one thing I think we have learned throughout all of this is how important fans in the building actually is. That when we first looked at this, we said, is it that big of a deal? Is it going to be a big deal? Turns out it is. And it is the one thing that I wish you could see, which is, imagine Canadian fans being able to go to these things every night. Imagine all of a sudden in Vancouver, Leaf fans are packing your building for every single one of these games, or Habs fans are packing your building, and you always have that mix. Because if you've ever been to a hockey game against a Canadian team, it's the best atmosphere that you can have with, I think, professional sports in this country, where there's just kind of that chirpy attitude, that love to turn around in your seat and yell at the guy in the Habs uniform when your team scores. Like, I'm going to miss that stuff. I'm going to miss the shots of the husband and wife with the different uniforms on sitting side by side and knowing that we're missing 56 games of that. But outside of it, I just think that the schedule, the amount of teams, the amount of division games, and just the sport itself are really going to lead to an amazing season, like a truly, truly incredible year.
Yeah, it's now that you're saying it, And we're going to ask this question of Donald Fehr, head of the NHLPA, coming up at the bottom of the hour. It almost feels like it's your civic duty to watch as many of these games as possible, to make sure the ratings are cuckoo bananas. And yeah, I understand the conflict of interest because I work for Sportsnet, who has all the national rights to the NHL games. I don't care. I'll be a corporate chill here because I want this thing to continue forever. And it won't be, hopefully, in future years where you're only playing teams inside your own division. You're going to play the other teams and you're gonna be back to playing the Boston Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning, but you're going to play mostly the teams inside your division. And I think if this thing is what I expect it to be, it could be the first of many years of this to come. And then we will have fans in the building for, I don't know, four times against the Vancouver Canucks.
So let's get into it. Let's do our segment here. Let's do Leafs regular season storyline power rankings. We did this for the Raptors. I think now it's time to do it for the Leafs. Just basically, I stacked these. I came up with these. You can disagree with the order in which I do them. I'm going to go with what I think are the most important regular season stories to, I don't want to say the least, because, again, everything in this city gets ramped up to be a huge story. And these things will change throughout the year. But as of today, what we're looking for. Yeah, what do you want?
Okay, so like as far as importance to winning the ultimate goal or what fans are just interested in?
No, I think it's just stories. And sometimes those are if it's winning the ultimate goal, it's simply just getting into the playoffs and then Freddie Anderson gets hot. So,
indicators, I know. I mean, that's so true but in this sport. But, like, if we're looking at indicators, like, what's the most important thing to see during the regular season?
This is
like,
not
that's
that.
Not what we're doing. Okay.
No, that is not that. Those things tie into the storylines, though, naturally. Like, clearly these things that you're going to be watching for are basically markers of potential future success. But no, I think these are the things that we will be monitoring. These are the things that we will be talking about. And this is kind of, I think, the order in which the fans will care about them during regular season games. Like, we talked about rivalries to an extent, and I think that that is a big story coming into it, how these things build up, and it will be something that we continue to talk about later in the show. Like, we've got Mark Denis, we've got Colby on today to just break down what they think is going to happen here in terms of the hate teams feel for one another, the playoff vibes people are going to feel, all of that stuff. But this is just Leaf specific, what we're going to care about with the team. So number one, I think, is obvious. I don't really think anybody can even nitpick with it. It's whatever buzzword you want to attribute to it, it's consistency, it's maturity, it's hard to play against, it's toughness, it's competitiveness, it's habits. If you heard Brendan Shanahan yesterday, he laid it out with this. What we want to be doing, and this is a quote now, quote, "We're laying a foundation for habits that Stanley Cup champions possess," end quote. They have set the bar here themselves. Everyone has recognized it, and the Leafs have confirmed it. And now we all know that even in a year that's 56 games against only Canadian teams with a weird travel schedule and a condensed schedule where there's 3.5 games a week, the Leafs have to be better in the regular season. And they've had some good point totals. They've had some good records. But this is such a weird one because, of course, there are going to be numbers to track this, but this is going to be a situation where I think we're going to know it when we see it. We're going to know it when we see it if the new acquisitions change the Toronto Maple Leafs and if the young players take a step in their willingness to play night in, night out with a little bit of more perseverance. Again, buzzwords, buzzwords, buzzwords. Toughness, we've said a million times on the show, to us is not about going out there and fighting the other team. That's just not the direction hockey is going. The import is lowering by the day, but having the toughness to gut out, again, almost 4 games a week right now, a bunch of back-to-backs, not let up, not build up excuses, but to show that, hey, we have the best talent on paper, so we are going to parlay that into a division win, an advantage in the first round, and a feeling as though there has actually been a meaningful step forward for this group.
So this is, I mean, it's building up what you said about, yeah, whether they can win the ultimate goal. And, hey, Freddie Anderson gets hot, you end up the 4 seed going into this playoffs, and they could win a Stanley Cup. Sure, they could. But this is a season in which style points matter. How you do it matters. And we could revisit this in a couple of weeks where the Leafs are playing 500 hockey, and they're looking good, but not at the top of the division, and maybe we feel a little bit differently about this point, but you said it. This has been the number one point of discussion from everybody top down in the organization, that it's not good enough to win games 6-5 through the course of a long regular season and be disinterested and turn the switch. There's no switch turning. It has to start tonight, that you have to look engaged, that you have to have your foot on the gas when you have those 2- and 3-goal leads, that you have to put less of a workload on Freddie Anderson.
Yep, and you're right. It's going to be something that is going to be analyzed immediately, and it's going to be something that, well, first, again, this is coming from the team itself. Like we discussed this a little bit earlier this week, but the idea that a lot of the camp was focused on this, that this is the messaging.
Their first practice, like, did they even have pucks?
Right. That a lot of the messaging coming out from this team is very much, hey, we are all acknowledging this, and we are all aware of it, and having it not be this way, there's no way of sugarcoating it. It's going to be a failure. And sure, they could turn on a switch and they could win in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but for the regular season, this is what is going to matter. This is what we are going to judge them on. This is what the debates are going to be about, and this is what fans will be focused on, I think, more than just about anything else. Number two, I went back and forth on the next three. I think the next three are all really big, but to me, number two is blue line balance. The biggest problem of the, I want to say, can we call it the big three era? Like, I don't know really what to call it, but the Austin Matthews era, right? Austin Matthews comes into this organization and obviously things have changed. They have a first overall pick. They have a building block that they've never had before. Like, well, not since Matt Sundin anyways. And there is a renewed sense of optimism with this franchise. They basically always have loaded forward groups. Freddie Anderson essentially works out from the moment that he arrives. So I guess I shouldn't say moment, because I think his first like week when he was with the Leafs, everyone was like, was, we got that. This guy, he's a bum.
Oh, yeah. No, I was part of that.
That they don't, they've never had a blue line that has resembled anything like this. The closest thing to it was 2017, when Morgan Riley was 22 years old, led the team in ice time. They had Jake Gardner, the best version of Nikita Zaitsev, Hunwick, Polak, and Carrick. The following season, they go out and get Ron Hainsey, Zaitsev regresses, and it's been nothing but mishmashes and things that didn't work and imperfect situations and Tyson Berries and Cody Ceci's. There has not been a blue line that's like this. All of a sudden, the one thing that we talked about a lot last year, where it was they don't have the right balance, they can't figure out the pairings, they don't know really, they got to keep shuffling these things around. Who's going to play with Morgan Riley? Can Travis Dermott play? Do you have any depth? A lot of these questions have been answered. Your top four looks solid. And your bottom pairing looks better than I would say it ever has before with Bogosian and Dermott. Now you're also looking at a situation where there is a buffer between an injury and Martin Marincin, who continued to become, and I don't mean to kick Martin Marincin because I actually think he's fine as an 8th or 9th defenseman. And that's what he's supposed to be, and that's what he finally is right now. You've got an interesting player in Mikko Lehtinen who has not had, I guess, the camp that the Leafs were hoping, because it doesn't look like he's going to be in the lineup tonight. But this is it. That, like, Morgan Riley has a partner, someone who wasn't healthy last year, who missed, I think, 22 games with injuries. 22 games. He's coming in healthy, and he's coming in with a new partner that around the league is respected, revered, and understood to have a lot more skill than anyone he's ever played with. He gets to go back up onto the power play. You have added some toughness and some size in Bogosian. You've added some urgency for Travis Dermott. It's really, really exciting, and if it doesn't work out, it's a huge problem.
Yeah, well, this is the area where they've made the biggest improvement, right? It's the area they've spent the most money. They've spent a lot of the offseason casting aside guys who are making too much money and aren't necessarily not worth that money, but were untenable when it comes to this team's cap sheet, talking about the captains, talking about, yeah, you know who I'm talking about. And they go out and get the TJ Brody fish when that's all we've been looking for next to Morgan Riley for basically his entire tenure as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We know this team is stacked with forwards, especially at the very top, and maybe we'll get to the third line at some point, but that's way less of an issue than the blue line. The blue line, the blue line, the blue line, and we talk about being Sib-like in protecting leads in some of these previous years. How much of that starts with the defense core? And if it looks much better than before already, you're talking about having house money and looking better during the regular season. It's absolutely a massive, massive storyline.
Yeah, I think that's part of keeping the puck out of the net. Like, this is obvious, but it's going to require a real emphasis from the entire team, not just the blue line. But it's very, very strange to look at this team and say, A, the blue line looks like a strength on paper, a lot more so than even last year when there was excitement about Tyson Barrie and the potential for offense, right? Like, again, it's about balance, and there's no Cody Ceci playing in your top pairing. That just immediately changes, I think, the expectation. But to go from one of the worst groups, especially when with Morgan Riley hurt last year, to this, where, you know, look around the division. I know that Habs fans would disagree based on, you know, their top two guys, and I know that Flames fans would probably disagree. You could have Canucks fans that say that just having Hughes is enough to basically try and push this down, but there could seriously come a point where we look at this Leafs team and say they have the best blue line in this division. Like, that is not an unrealistic expectation, and it certainly has been, again, in every single year since they've had Austin Matthews, since they've had this core. So, to me, the biggest story is getting to watch Morgan Riley with this blue line. Again, missed 23 games. He went from a 20-goal season to a 3-goal season last year. He was bumped off power play one. He lost a lot of responsibility to Tyson Barrie as they basically dedicated a season to try to figure that guy out. He is back with his spot on the pecking order. I think he gets to be a leader on this team. He's got another great partner, and I really would anticipate a significant trickle-down effect for this team, and I think it's going to be a huge story. Number three, Freddie Anderson in the strategy in net. Do you disagree with the order?
So
is this your first nitpick?
Okay. So this gets back to like what this list is about, because I think this is ultimately the most important point as far as this team's success. But if you have no future attached to this guy, we both agree that he's not going to be part of the future. This is his final season as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Keep reading things that this Leafs team, despite the now pretty long track record of Jack Campbell, that they still believe he's a legitimate, viable, potential starter down the line, that he, in a shortened season, is not going to get a huge runway here. It's not about protecting the games and trying to keep them below 60, because that's going to happen, because, you know, they play 56 total this season. But that if he gets off to the to a rough start, and they have a bit of an easy schedule coming out of the gate because they got two straight against the Senators coming up this weekend, and obviously he's not going to play in all three of these games, that Jack Campbell's going to get a chance to take this net, I think. Especially considering what we're coming off of. And yes, Freddie Anderson wasn't as bad as people portrayed him, but the numbers were career worst.
They were. And first of all, stop confusing people about what the list is about. It's very clear. They're just stories people care about coming into the season. Stop, like, confusing it for everybody. You're like, is it this? Is it that? It's like, no, they're the storylines that people are monitoring with this season. But that's it, is that it goes beyond just his success, right? It's the story of what the strategy is going to be in net, how safe this guy feels in his position. Because in years past, it's been Freddie Anderson goes through his slumps, and it's very, very obvious, and the messaging from top down is, Freddie's our guy, Freddie's the guy, Freddie's the guy, don't worry about it, he can go through a slump, we know he's going to bounce back. In 2019, he was a top 10 Vezina candidate with a 917 save, who through large stretches of the season, people were looking at and saying, hey, is this guy the second best goalie now in the NHL? Is this guy the third best goalie in the NHL? Like, where does he stack up? Last year, he fell to a career-low 909 save percentage, and he was a whipping boy throughout the majority of the season. And they went out and got a backup who had largely been struggling on a really bad team, and people immediately said, let's see more of that guy. Let's see more of the dude who has never, ever, ever been a starting goalie in this league and has not shown any reason to believe that he really should be outside of a very, very small sample. Let's move away from this dude. We know Freddie Anderson likes to play a lot of games. You hit it by saying that he's going to have basically the restrictor played on anyways with the amount that's on the schedule, the amount of back-to-backs, that there's going to be, it's going to be a little awkward here, man. Like, there's no more of should Freddie Anderson be playing back-to-backs. He's not going to get them. And yeah, what happens if the Leafs do look better in front of Jack Campbell early? I think that this has a real potential to snowball. I think it has real potential to piss off Freddie Anderson. And for, yes, a guy who is entering unrestricted free agency and probably, if he's at all rational thinking, has to look at this and say, so wait, I've been bailing you guys out since you got me and I've been a great goaltender and now you're not going to stand by me in this time? Like, this has a bit of ugliness potential.
Oh, for sure.
Because it had ugliness potential when they traded for Jack Campbell. So it certainly has ugliness potential now.
And since then, all that's happened as the team has been upfront with him and saying that we've listened on trades for you and he hasn't gotten an extension and he must also see the writing on the wall that he is not part of the future plans for this organization. Yeah, really interested in how that plays out. We'll get back to the rest of your list in a second, but we got a break because we got Donald Fehr, Executive Director of the NHL Players Association, coming up next. It's Good Show, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A lot of hard work from a lot of different people got us to this point, but it is certainly on. Leafs-Habs tonight on Sportsnet. Very happy to be joined now by Donald Fehr, Executive Director of the NHL Players Association. Donald, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. You there, Donald? We got you?
Yes, I'm here. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, appreciate it. It wasn't that long ago that, man, on this very radio show, we were having discussions about the rhetoric going back and forth seemingly between the PA and the league and wondering whether we were going to get here. I wonder about you, your interpretation of that news cycle. Did you ever have doubts that we would see today, opening day of the season?
Oh, if you're talking about the last several months, the answer is no. If you're talking about going back all the way to last spring, sure. From the vantage point of last spring, we had literally no idea what the future was going to bring. But by the time we got through the summer, got the agreements done, proved we could play even if it was in a bubble in a relatively easier situation than now, and seen what's happened in the other leagues, I was pretty sure that sooner or later we'd figure it out.
Okay, so talking about seeing what's happening in the other leagues, the NBA has had just an incredibly difficult start. They've had a lot of guys test positive. They've had games delayed. And we look at this schedule where the NHL is playing basically 3.5 games per week. There's a ton of stuff packed in. Have you heard more from players seeing what's been happening in the NBA? Has this changed people's outlook at all? Is there more optimism because the NHL has had opportunity to learn from it? Like, what has it been like watching another league start this up and see them have these delays and see them have the issues that they've come across already?
Well, when you're sitting at home and you're watching TV and listening to the news and figuring out what the new rules are going to be and trying to watch what other sports are going on your television and so on, everybody thinks about those things. Players think about those things. Certainly their families do. But I think that two attributes are really there. First of all, they really paid attention last summer to what the rules were, what the protocols were. People were really responsible. And I think everybody understands that we're going to have to be really responsible again because it's going to be harder. We're not dealing with 24 teams. We're dealing with 31. We're dealing with 20-something different cities. We are dealing with some travel, limited to an extent compared to what it normally would be, but still travel. And so people are aware and I think will be really responsible. Secondly, I think people understand that given all of the moving parts this year, you're likely to have some issues to manage. And they'll have to be managed as best we can. The object is to minimize them, cope with them, and go on. And I think guys are determined to make sure that it works. And hopefully we'll be able to give the fans a really great season.
Yeah, and we're getting a sample of that right out of the gates. 17 Dallas Stars players test positive. Their start to the season being delayed. And unlike the NBA, it seems that there's no hard and fast rules about when a team can resume to play. How will we know that a team has overcome those issues or their roster is managed enough that they can resume playing?
When the doctors tell us. It's really just that simple. We have expert epidemiologists on our staff, people working with us. The league does. The team has their own individual physicians. They're looking at the situation. They look at the testing data. You do the contract tracing. You figure out where it came from. And you listen to the experts. You know, that's what all any of us can do. And that's what we're going to be prepared to do. The Dallas situation is a tough one, obviously, and it's going to have to be managed. But hopefully it is and will remain a relatively isolated phenomenon.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying when you're talking about listening to the doctors and the medical professionals, when you're talking about individual players who have tested positive and returning. I guess what I'm curious about is the actual roster construction. If those players are ruled out, how many players do you need to be able to ice for it to be fair for competitive balance, those type of reasons?
Well, we'll have, obviously we have the taxi squads, and this is a bit of a strained analogy, but, you know, if we have a series of what amounts to short-term disabilities or short-term injuries, you cope, just like you do during a normal season. It's not going to be perfect. There's going to be people that question it. People are going to say, but if they'd only had Joe or Sam or Fred available or something like that, things might have been different. Well, that's maybe true, but we're going to do the best we can. I think on the overall situation, it's going to be really good, and you're going to see some really great hockey.
Yeah, and I think that most people have come around to that, and that we've had enough sport now being played in the pandemic, and we saw it with baseball being the first North American sport where there was travel, and we're seeing it now with the NBA, that yes, don't let perfection be the enemy of good. Get this in, entertain people, and I believe the players. We've talked to players that have told us, like, you know, we talked to Nick Foligno last week, and this is a guy who clearly has an added import as a captain and has talked about wanting to keep his team on track and wanting to be responsible. Obviously, the leagues want people to be responsible. There are protocols in place. They are going to do their best, and maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here. But there was always talk about what was going to happen with vaccines. And Gary Bettman has addressed them saying, hey, listen, the players are going to get aligned with everybody else. But so far, what we've speculated about is the idea of, listen, these are professional athletes who monitor what goes into their body down to, yeah, the picogram, right? They want to make sure that everything is in order and that they're not doing anything risque. Have you heard at all any pushback about players or their fears of having to take a vaccine? Do you think that this could become a bigger story as the year goes on, either unwillingness or total buy-in from the players to take this?
I think it's unlikely. I suspect that as the vaccine rolls out, if there are problems or health risks caused by the vaccines, and we haven't seen any of that yet, if there are, that'll become known and people will adjust to it. If there aren't, which is what the expectation is, I think the overwhelming majority of people will be willing to do it and happy to do it. And I suspect that as it plays out, players will prove to be no different than the general population in that regard. You know, I talk about professional athletes. People ask me what makes them different. And there are a number of things, but, you know, sort of demographically, they're young, they're male, and they're athletically gifted. Beyond that, they break down just like the general population, which is what you would expect.
Talking to Donald Fehr, executive director of the NHL Players Association. So, yeah, we're buckling in for a different season, one that is highly anticipated on this side of the border. Donald, we're really excited to see all.
I've heard that. That's the rumor, yeah.
Yeah, and it starts tonight with one of the best rivalries in sports. It's the Leafs and the Canadiens. Yeah, we're excited about it. Also, for as just straight up employees of Sportsnet who have the national rights for these games, really feels like the rest of this country is going to buy into this thing in a big way. And we know it's a weird season, but I think there's a possibility that we could have big ratings, big demand for this. And of course, there's it's likely that we don't see fans in the stands all season long. But, you know, more eyeballs, bigger ratings, more money infused into the league is better for all the players. Has your constituency given you any indication about, you know, the appetite for this going forward? Have you thought about that, about this being a longer-term thing than just a one-season one-off for the North Division?
So far, there's been no real thought about it on any organized basis, certainly no discussion with the NHL about it and so on. And a lot of the history of the NHL involves rivalries, as you know, which are cross-border. So that would be a big lift if we ever got to that point. That said, however we got here, and it's sad that we are, but however we got here, it's a unique opportunity to see some repeated matchups. And my guess is, given the frequency with which they're going to play one another, you're going to see some really intense games. And that's going to be good for everybody. Like we do after any season, people will sit down and review and look at it. But I think the expectation is that we'll go back to a much more traditional, if not the traditional, setup next year. But we'll see. And I certainly hope you're right about the kind of attention and interest this will spark.
Yeah, and it would be good if it did infuse a little more money into the league, because, I mean, Gary Bettman talked about it being maybe more financially beneficial from the owner's perspective to not even play this season. He also talked about losses being in the billions. How soon do you think this league can get back on track financially? If we are projecting, this pandemic to end before the fall?
I'm not going to comment about those things attributed to Gary. That's his business to discuss, and I'll leave that to him. All I can say is that, if the vaccine rollout works, if we get back to the point where it's obvious we can have fans, and fans begin to come back, then I think we'll revert to normal very, very quickly. With a renewed appetite to do it. You know, the history of teams, professional sports in North America is that if there's an interruption, if there's a problem, if there's an issue, when things return to normal, the interest is, at least for a while, hyped. It's increased because people have a thirst for it. Sports matter. People identify with the players. They identify with the teams. It provides a source of unification of feeling for cities. So I'm hopeful that by the time we talk a year from now, if we do, people are going to say, all right, we've had several months of the 21-22 season and things look really good.
You know what? That's an interesting point you bring up because, yeah, you're working for the players and you're trying to make them every dollar possible, and you're obviously you've been pretty successful at that. But how much of your conversations and your work has been motivated also by that fact that there is a kind of a greater good here? Like, we all need this distraction. How much have you thought about that while you're going through all this the process of getting us to this point?
Well, you sort of have two mindsets when you're doing this. One is, you're talking to somebody, you're working on a problem, you're reading a memo, and you're focused on the specific items that are discussed in one of those contexts. The other one is, you know, if you take a walk, you get up in the morning before you go to bed, there's an inevitable tendency to reflect. And I guess for me, what makes this different in a day-by-day work sense, work meaning for staff, not obviously for players, is that you're trying to do something in which the fundamental issue with which you are grappling is not something within your control. In any sort of a normal labor dispute, no matter what the circumstances are, you can always make a deal. Maybe it's a deal you don't like, maybe it's a deal everybody likes, but you can always make a deal and end the problem. We can't do that here. In this case, the NHL is just like everybody else, and it makes things more difficult to deal with, less certain than they otherwise would have been, and more subject to change. And this is, I was about to say, it's new and it's different for me in my career, and I've been doing this over 40 years now, but it's new and different for everyone, not just me.
Yeah, I'm doing a radio show from my bedroom. So yes, it's very much new and different for everybody, including yourself. Donald, thanks for doing this. Congrats on getting us to this point.
Very good. Look forward to talking to you down the line. Bye-bye.
Sounds good.
Take care.
Bye-bye. There's Donald Fear, executive director of the NHL Players Association. They did it. And again, yeah, I guess he was never in doubt of playing this season because they had that agreement that they had agreed to. And I guess the NHL tried to renegotiate before this thing was set in place. But, yeah, we're here, man. We did it. And as a result, it is on.
It is on. Talking to players now and getting a chance to talk to Donald Fear, it seems pretty clear that the season was never really in jeopardy. It was always that's how these things happen. That's what it gets overstated by certain camps that are trying to push certain agendas, and that this was not like in years past where it was like, oh my God, they could miss a year. They all understand. And Gary Bettman can say the thing about how it's more financially beneficial for them not to play at all, but we all know that's not true because it would devalue franchises even further, and it would make your league irrelevant. And by not being present, the more you wait, the more you open up the opportunity for other habits to form.
No, so short term and long term. In the short term, sure. Maybe you're going to lose $1 billion this year on paper. You're going to take $1 billion in debt this year. But, okay, you wouldn't have lost anything if you didn't play, I suppose. But I can't imagine you missing a year in this situation and coming back with 32 NHL franchises.
Yeah. Well, you do lose something. You lose the TV money, which they are going to be getting, and which is going to give them a cash infusion. And what they hope, I'm guessing, is that, this is going to be as successful as you and I think it could be, potentially. The one thing I'm done with, though, I got to tell you, is this whole greater good thing that you tried to outline there at the end. Like, this is a business. They're doing it for business purposes. The whole I'm over this narrative that we've tried to portray that sports is somehow – it's important. I think we realize that it's important. I think that we understand that, like many things that we took for granted to a certain extent during regular times, that it has its place. But the idea that these are like, you know, charitable entities that are doing this for the goodness of the general public so that they have distractions. It's like people have distractions. People have their Netflix accounts. They have their books. They have their board games, their puzzles, their friends over a Skype. Like, it's just they're playing hockey because it's a business and we love it. But I think we should stop really being preachy about its import to a certain degree, and that this is all basically the league has come together and done this thing. Like, I'm over that. Like, can we just check that now? Can we move on from this? Like, are we're still doing that?
So I'm Mr. Cynical, as you know. Like, I'm Mr. Cynical. And I think I recently sent you a DM where there was, like, a headline about, hey, the season's not about making money, like Gary Bettman said. Like, it was a direct quote. It's not about making money. And, like, we went over the reasons why that is, okay, maybe true in a micro sense, but not in a macro sense. So, I don't expect people's motivations to be, hey, we're going into lockdown again. Here's, we'll put on the circus for everybody and tune into the circus. But here's what I'll say is, like, ends and means here is that, things are still crappy, and we got some news that things are getting crappier as far as your ability to do things starting, tonight at midnight? And I'm going to very much enjoy the fact that, I can turn on the TV Friday night, Saturday night, and watch the Leafs and Ottawa Senators. And
but that's fine.
Yeah,
but that's fine.
You're right.
And it's okay to just say that. It's okay to just say that you're excited about sports. You and I have done this discussion now for like the last 2 months. The idea that it's not okay to just be a sports fan anymore, and that you have to be more than that. That sports have to be tied with everything all of the time. And I don't want that weight of it all anymore. Like, I don't. And when it comes to hockey, it's like, I'm just excited because hockey is back. Yes, is it something to do and is it something to watch when you're stuck at home and the province tells you, like, hey, don't go outside unless it's for something essential? Yeah, of course. That's going to come into your mind that, oh, okay, well, at least I have Leafs games 3.5 times a week. That's a pretty good thing to have on the docket. But the idea that this is all part of the pulling together of society is just, it's too much. And it leads into that same stuff that we've talked about over and over and over again, which is over-inflating things or feeling as though it's necessary to couch your sports fandom with, hey, I'm not just a sports fan. I am a fan of sports because of X and its added import to Y.
But again, I don't think it can even be part of the reason why you do something, but I do think it's going to bring this country together in a way, having this Canadian division. I think in a way it's brought the PA and the league together because they're fighting a common enemy. And yeah, there was some harsh rhetoric, I guess, at times. But if Donald Fehr never had any doubt about this season going off without a hitch, that, yeah, man, it's kind of been a nice byproduct, I suppose, of what's happening, if not the intended purpose.
Sure. I guess. Like, yeah, okay, there are byproducts and things will happen. I want to take a break and do the rest of my Leafs power rankings for the stories of the season. And I also, but I actually thought the most interesting thing was, hey, I anticipate that we're going to go back to a traditional schedule, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. Again, this is not, I guess you don't have anything set in stone right now. And man, you don't even know what it is going to look like. What happens with the vaccine? I was encouraged also by the fact that he said that he doesn't anticipate any pushback to the vaccine, that it is going to be, although when he said it's going to be like the general public, I was like, no, that's actually the part where I don't think there is absolute buy-in. I don't think that there is everyone looking at it. And sure, if everything is going according to plan and there have not been side effects and people have not been complaining, but just like we know how news disseminates now, and this, we know how news gets around now, and we know how false news and conspiracy theories can move rapidly and can cause spikes in fear of people. But outside of the vaccine stuff, I think that there's something to Donald Fehr saying we'll see when it comes to the future of divisions.
Oh, you don't think we're putting together a tweet where the quote is we'll see Donald Fehr as in regards to the future of the Canadian division going beyond this season. We'll see. I just wrote the tweet right there. Yeah, man. This league is trying to recoup whatever money they can, and is why you're going to have ads on helmets, and you're going to have ads everywhere. You're going to have ads advertising the names of the freaking division. Sorry, Scotia North Division, right? Like, and part of it is, I guess, I get it. Like, give back to some of these advertisers because they're not getting what they signed up for. But part of it is, yeah, they're going to lose, if not a billion, close to $1 billion here, if this Canadian division thing is successful. And yeah, the TV money's already been set, so whatever. I guess in this year, it doesn't bring in more cash, and there's no fans in the seats, and Canadian teams end up selling out anyway, so that's maybe not the biggest point of emphasis. But we've talked about it. The appetite for hockey in this country was very, hey man, you liked your local team, your local market ate up all the games for your local team, but outside of that,
You should say this city.
Right, I can't speak. Yeah, country. I can't speak for the rest of the country. In this city, that was the case, and I think there's going to be a rejuvenation. People are going to, not that people weren't paying attention to the other Canadian franchises, but way more. And if that,
well, it's impossible not to.
Yeah, and if that ups the ante and the appetite for these national TV packages, and that's more money in the pockets of the National Hockey League, that's ultimately more money in the pockets of the NHL players. So, yeah, why wouldn't they want that? Do they want money? I think they do, and I think this is a way to make it. Let's take a break and come back, finish off your Leafs power rankings when we continue. It's a good show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunk is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Basically a three-hour Leafs hour. It's the Leafs hours. It's good shows, Leafs hours. And yeah, if you do like the way that we talk about this team, subscribe to Leafs Hour Podcast. Leave a review. And you and I are going to start to try to do something where with the reviews, if you do have questions, we're going to guarantee that we'll get to them at some point. And yeah, if you do have stuff today, by the way, Maple Leafs related content, or I guess Habs, got Mark Denis coming up at 10:30, shoot it to the text line, 590-590, or tweet us at JD Bunkus at Sportsnet Ben, and we'll see if we can get to some of them. But yeah, we mentioned it in the last block. We're talking to Donald Fehr, and I really do think that a point of curiosity, you keep saying that it's because we work at Sportsnet. I guess that is a part of it that we should acknowledge is,
yeah,
it's definitely better for business if all the Canadian teams are playing each other and you guarantee a Canadian team in the semifinal and Canadian teams against each other in the postseason, all of that good stuff. But I genuinely believe that the NHL has overlooked Canada for a long time, and they have not prioritized Canada. Let's just put it that way, that they acknowledge its existence, they appreciate Canada, but far more attention goes to trying to make sure that the Florida Panthers are doing just okay, right? Like, I know that owners wanted a salary cap, but the fact that, you know, there's never even been the discussion of a luxury tax or ways to get these Canadian teams better suited to compete, even though we know it's good for the health of the league, that franchises with actual fan bases are moving the needle and getting the Stanley Cup Finals. Canada has just, it hasn't gotten that same treatment. It has fallen down the pecking order when it comes to priorities for this league. And all of a sudden it feels like it is one. And obviously it's related to circumstance. That's how we got here. They wouldn't have done this without the pandemic. But sometimes you need something weird to happen to create a change. And then once you see something, it's impossible to forget it. And basically every person I talk to, whether it's a fan, another media member, I've talked to a couple of players, a couple of former players. Everyone is excited about prospect of this division, and we know that it won't stay this way in terms of you only play Canadian teams, but if this is a success, if this goes in and we have this format and you can make the travel work and you can get the excitement from the players and it builds into everyone talking about it in a league that has largely struggled in its digital presence to all of a sudden be massive online, to have communities of fans on there hopefully having fun, but I don't really have, if there's one thing I won't be optimistic, it's about Twitter.
On Twitter?
Right. But that this country all of a sudden coming together to have rivalries and caring and knowing each other's teams and feeling a little bit like baseball with your own division and, you know, North Division only fantasy pools, like stuff like that, that has me excited, and I really do think that it has staying power, that it's hard for me to look at this and say we're going to watch this play out and it's a success and that the NHL is going to say that no, we don't want as many games between the Leafs and the Habs, or sorry, the Leafs and the Canucks as we do the Leafs and the Florida Panthers. I can't bring myself to believe it.
Well, here's why. Okay, they were forced into this, we know that, and yeah, the border is the big issue and the pandemic, blah 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 blah, but I think they were fighting like hell to have it happen because this is a toothpaste tube situation. And you said it. Once you see it, how can you unsee it? It's Bird Box. We're Bird Box. And, yeah, I mean, hopefully it doesn't end as poorly as it did for the people who saw it in Bird Box. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, man, that's the thing. I think the NHL had an idea that they didn't want to do this because they knew it would be such a give back to hockey fans in this country and be such a boon for their television partners that have just been begging for a Canadian franchise to go super deep in the playoffs for years and years and years, and it felt like it was going to be the Leafs, and it didn't happen. And now you're forcing one of the seven into a Stanley Cup semifinal, that it's just, you won't be able to do it. And maybe there's going to be a pushback from some of those American franchises, but again, they'll get the Leafs in their building a couple of times a year, just not the four or whatever. But yeah, I think that's it, man. It's just, we see it, it's going to be a success, and there will be no going back.
I guess I just don't know why they would go back if it's a success. Because, again, you're still going to go into other teams' buildings. They're still going to get the Canadian fan boost that those markets get, right? Like, the Florida Panthers are still going to have Canadian teams come through.
I guess, what's the format? Like, what are we going back to? Yeah, top
this.
Three in the division. But yeah, top three make the playoffs and then wild cards after that. And that's what messes with it, is the conferences, right? That you have
so,
East and West time zones, and then you've got now Seattle entering the picture.
Yeah, I think it's workable. I also think that what we are going to see is, even though the schedule is condensed, the idea that you are having those series, these mini series where your travel is a little smarter, you're not having as many weird back-to-backs where you have to do a flight to somewhere else and it's awful and these guys are grinding out. Again, like, I just think back to everybody, every one of these athletes being on record about the bubble and just how the schedule changed things for them, the hockey players and the NBA players, and how it made them just a little bit more appreciative of the rest and recovery that they were able to get in between games without the stresses of everything else. And if there's one thing I don't think we're going back to, it's a schedule that is closer to what we saw before what we're going to see this year, where like you're going to see more mini series. And why wouldn't you? I don't really think that. Here's what I think. You can keep this schedule and you can keep the players happy with smarter travel if you have divisions like this where the mini series make sense and that you end up having it where the games mean more and you have these little playoff series basically in season. I just think that the NHL has known for a long time that they've been trying to sell rivalries. It's one of the great things about this sport is that the rivalries really have resonated, but they've fallen off. You and I did a segment, I want to say like 2 years ago, where we talked about, hey, what are the real rivalries left in hockey? Because when we were growing up, there were lots of them. Mm-hmm. And it was off of the Penguins and Capitals, I believe, playing again in a Stanley Cup playoff series. And you said, okay, well, when these two teams meet, there still is that something. There's still that throwback juice of Ovechkin and Crosby coming into the league at the same time and debating who the best player was and whether Ovechkin's goals were worth more and whether he could sacrifice enough to win like Sidney Crosby and all of that stuff, that was a real rivalry. And outside that, everything else kind of felt manufactured. This is a league that Wednesday nights in the States does rivalry night, right? Where they put two teams up against one another and they say, see, it's rivalry night. It's Sharks and Kings. Catch the fever. And you go, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think that's working. It's a league that completely hijacked the playoff format to try and create rivalries. Mm-hmm. And maybe it would have worked with Boston and Toronto had Toronto won one of those series. But I would say that so far, there aren't two fan bases that truly despise each other because of the playoff format or that there was a real rivalry created from them. It has not been a success. Here you have an opportunity to basically, I think, check all the boxes. You get
the ready-made. It's already sitting right there. It's right below the surface. It was impossible to call it a rivalry because you just didn't play enough and there was not enough at stake. It's like, did you even care about the extra point if it went to overtime or a shootout against the Vancouver Canucks? That's when you like sell out, right? Because we gave up a point to the team in the other conference. Yeah, man, it's right there. It's already ready made. The cake is all the ingredients are put together. The oven's turned on. Just put it in the oven. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, part of this is there is just investment. I want it to work as a hockey fan. I want this to be a great product. I'm accepting the potential for it to be very sloppy early on and to have the... I think it's still going to take me a little while to get acclimated to no fans in the building of hockey games. Like, it just especially when we're watching Leafs Habs and, you know, Leafs Senators and there aren't fans. It's going to feel weird to me because I'm so used to that being such a huge element of a hockey game. And especially when we're talking about the Canadiana of it all. But I really want this to work because I just think that this is what is best for the game and I love this game. And I'm nationalistic when it comes to wanting it to work more in this country. I think that more people in this country care about it, have cared about it, and that, yeah, there is a runway here, that this can work, and people are not going to want to go back to the way things were before this.
This is, honestly, and I'm trying to rack my brain as to another example of this. We are in this country with all of our pro sports teams so reliant on validation from our neighbors to the south, right? Like, oh my God, Raptors fans, we the other. Oh, you know, disrespecting us and, you know, we can play with the big boys and yada, yada, yada. This is the one instance where, like, who cares? Americans, you're not going to pay attention to our little division here and you don't care about us? Like, great. That's fine. This is, how many examples do we have of this in this country? It's like the World Juniors, I guess, and now this. Like, this is our thing. We have so few
things that are this.
Well, Hockey
Night in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, Hockey Night in Canada is like, it's all the way back. It's just all the way back. It just, you know, I can't think of anything. You're going to want to pay attention to the other teams just way more. That it's too much. This is the other thing, too, actually. Now, and I'm just thinking about this on the fly. Yeah. But it is really hard to keep up with every team the way that you used to. Like, we do this professionally, and so it's a different story. The expectation is different from us or for us. But it is a more competitive atmosphere when it comes to content. Younger sports fans seemingly are less invested in professional sports. We have seen data collected that is an indicator. There is an indicator of, hey, the next generation is not going to care as much as the one that you and I reside in, the millennials.
Elder millennials.
It's a lot easier to track this league if you are just following the Canadian teams and you are invested in your teams and you do kind of embrace this format of, hey, you don't really need to know who Alexander Barkov is. You find out who he is in the playoffs if you face him, or when you're watching a playoff game. You know, you don't really need to know what's going on with the Nashville Predators center situation. Sure, if you're diehard, that will never turn you away. But to get more casual fans, to have more people invested, it sure seems pretty easy to get to know seven teams or potentially eight teams and really have a feel for, oh, we're playing these guys tonight and we know who this player is. And you and I talk about this with the NBA a lot in comparison to this league, which is the star power discrepancy, right? There's a huge star power discrepancy. You really have the potential to build up names in this country in a way that you kind of didn't even before, right? Like, all of a sudden, someone like Matthew Tkachuk can become such a bigger star because every single market hates his guts.
There's going to be through lines through the whole season. There's going to be stories of, three straight games the Leafs are playing the Canucks. That's three of, what, 9 or 10 against the Canucks. And you don't think something's going to happen in one of those games, or if not all three, that is going to carry your interest into watching that player either play against somebody else or the return series against the Canucks? Kind of reminds me of my youth and watching baseball in the American League and National League. It's like, National League, stuff was happening over there. I didn't necessarily know exactly what, but then in the World Series, worlds collide. There was a collision course that happened for the Blue Jays, and they ended up on the positive side of the ledger early 90s.
Yeah, I think that this even has the added benefit of, okay, you have the regional aspect that baseball has, but you also have more competitive balance. Yeah. Like, there isn't the fatalism of playing in the same division as the Yankees and the Red Sox. Like, no fan of the Canucks is going to look at this and say, well, this stinks. We're in the division with the Leafs who haven't won since 1967. What are we supposed to do? You know, how are we ever going to win?
Just coming off a deeper playoff run than them, yeah.
Right. Like, and also, man, there's so many things on this why it works, but I have gotten the sense that basically every fan base feels real optimism about their team's chances. And I like expectations, because expectations lead to tire fires, and expectations lead to fan investment and interest. And as much as Leaf fans right now are looking at this and saying, dude, if they don't win the division, it's a failure. I don't know if it's the stakes are nearly as high for a couple of the other ones, but I know that Montreal Canadiens fans think they're going to win this division. Like, they really hilarious. Do.
And well, they had a great off season, but yeah,
that's the thing.
And they beat the Penguins in a weird 5-game series. Congratulations.
Totally. But they went out, they added a couple of, like, actually really big names. They probably feel as though they have the best goaltending in the division. I think that Jets fans would push back. But you got Carey Price and now Jake Allen, who's going to be able to take a bunch of the workload off of his plate. And having two goalies might be more important now than ever. Like, who knows? But they probably feel as though they're the toughest division. They probably feel like maybe they have the best blue line in the division, that they have the best goaltending, that they've got these added forward groups, that they're going to be able to be more physical. Like, you can see the path. You can see the path. And why wouldn't you put a lot of stock into, hey, our team was better than your team in the meaningful games last year, and now you're going to tell us all these games are meaningful and that your team is going to be able to stand up to the rigors of that? Prove it. I'm just saying that the expectation from every fan base and the pressure that it puts on these franchises to not just be like, well, we're going to go into a 3-year rebuild. You can't be going in a 3-year rebuild if you're playing in the North Division and you're the Ottawa Senators. You're going to get your brains beaten in every night by all your rival franchises? Like, no chance. That's why you have to keep this. It's going to make all the Canadian teams have to stay good. The pressure on these GMs and these coaches and these players is going to be massive when you're facing off against your rival, like actual created rivals over a long course of time. Like, I'm getting so excited, I'm losing my words thinking about it. This is so great. This is so great. If it disappoints me, it's going to crush me into a million little pieces.
I need this to work. There's no downside.
But that's what I mean. Everything I think about when it comes to this division, like every angle I try to look at it from, it makes me more excited because I'm like, oh, this actually works. This is why it's better. This is a league that was created off an original six, and here you kind of have it. Like, you have the Canadian seven, and it fits. It fits the sport. It fits the fans. It fits the players. It fits the league, the sport, everything. Like, I cannot think of anything in hockey in my life that has felt better than this North Division. Like, truly, that I've been more excited for leading into a season. I have childhood excitement for hockey. I've not felt this way in a really long time. So, yes, please keep it together. Keep your Leafs mailbag stuff coming in. Keep tweeting us at JD Bunkus, at Sportsnet Ben. Subscribe to Leafs Hour Podcast. God, there's a lot of things here. Text 590-590. Getting back into Leaf storyline power rankings. So, we acknowledge to reset that number one is finding regular season consistency, dominance, maturity, being hard to play against, being tougher, forming habits. That is going to be the way that we judge this team's regular season more than anything else, and that it's a tie-in to everything, right? Like, all of those players will be held accountable to those things. So, yeah, I don't know how you could ever bump it down the pecking order. Number two is finally having blue line balance. Seeing that this team has its best defense core on paper ever, that it's been something that has plagued them since they brought in all of their young players and started the rebuild, here they actually have the opportunity to have a more balanced team, a more balanced roster, and one that does not have glaring holes all the way down the right side of the defense core. Number three is Freddie Anderson, who went from a legitimate Vezina candidate a season before to a whipping boy in the market, and now has greater competition behind him than he's ever had before to start a season. Like, it's been Curtis McElhinney behind you, and it's been Garrett Sparks behind you, and there has been a little bit of, hey, if you screw up, there's margin for error because the season is long, and they're not going to replace you with Garrett Sparks or Curtis McElhinney.
Well, or
Calvin Pickard. Right. You were safe. You were secure. That security is no longer there. You're going to have to play better out of the gates, and you're going to have to play better with more consistency, or else goaltending controversy is going to pop up basically almost every night. And with Freddie Anderson, we've seen it before, where the guy is a good goaltender. He makes spectacular saves, but way too many games last year, even though I think he took too much criticism, way too many games where just he was killing you with a soft goal, where the Leafs needed a save and he couldn't come up with one that most goalies should have. And those things happen, but it is what it is with Freddie. And so a lot of pressure's on him as a free agent and as one of the most important players of this team to get this thing done. Number four. I could have had this as number two, and I couldn't drop it below four. And I even previewed this one to you tonight. Matthews dominance watch, the top line. But most specifically, the Austin Matthews year. So, we're all going to care early on about Joe Thornton, right? Like, whether he fits, how he's looking. But a lot of that is going to be based off of how dominant Matthews is playing. If Matthews is racking up goals, then Thornton's fine. You know? If Matthews is racking up points, we're going to say that Mitch Marner's playing extremely well because it means he's going to be getting a lot of assists. This is going to rekindle a best player in the NHL debate. I think it has the potential to. And I know Edmonton fans listening to this are going to be freaking out. I don't think anybody on the planet right now thinks that Austin Matthews is a better player than Connor McDavid. I don't think that the expectation is even of Austin Matthews to be considered a better player than Connor McDavid. But that anger is only going to create a greater rivalry. And maybe we see more from these players. And maybe they do raise their games a little bit. To me, this just reminds me so much of Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby, where you have the one guy who's a goal scorer from a different country, and then you have the Canadian guy whose game is complete that everyone says that they would rather have. And imagine having a scenario where Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin were going to play each other in a season as many times as this, but only them, and their markets were hyper-focused on this right as they were both in their primes. Because this is what's happening here. Austin Matthews has lost 14 pounds, reportedly. He's down from 224. He's playing lighter. And he's got a full season with Mitch Marner, and also one of the greatest setup men of all time, regardless of how old he is and what he might look like, with the potential of changing that up and maybe adding someone like Nick Robertson to his top line. Who knows how it goes? Matthews is primed for an incredible year. He's primed for an incredible spotlight year. And I really do think that Leaf fans are going to put a lot of stock into what he does, that modern sports fans care a lot more about the individual than the team than they used to. Not that we have never cared about stars, but that people will be as invested in Matthews' points and Matthews' goals and Matthews' success and whether he's the best player or gets into those debates as they will with some of the other storylines that I've mentioned ahead of it. So he's primed. There's a lot of hype around him. And I think that it's going to lead to like 25 different storylines about him, and it's going to lead to a season where, yeah, he's going to be obviously the main driver of success outside of, yeah, good goaltending on a night-in, night-out basis.
Yeah, there's the potential, and again, if you go by predictions, it's maybe more than likely that the Maple Leafs are going to be in a situation where the doubts of the playoffs are going to subside like midway through the season, mm-hmm. and they're going to have a big gap on second place in the North Division, but this storyline will extend all throughout Game 1 to Game 56. Austin Matthews and the type of historical context we put him in a season that's possible for him, in which he's gotten better pretty much every single year he's been in the league. And this is a kid who, in his rookie year, put up 40 goals. He put up 47 in 70 games last year. He's the most even-strength goals in the entire National Hockey League since he stepped foot on a National Hockey League ice. And now the competition's less. I scan through Leaf fan Twitter accounts. Okay, that's not all I do, but I've seen a lot of Leaf fan Twitter accounts, and a lot of people putting a lot of ducats down on Austin Matthews leading the National mm-hmm. Hockey League in goals and blowing the doors off of this thing, even in a shortened season. Like, how many could he score? Could he score 40 and 56? Could it be more than that? Like, could we be seeing something that is, and for a guy who, again, who has set records since he stepped onto the ice, something that's even greater than we've seen him do in his 4 years in the National Hockey League? I think it's something that's on everybody's mind.
Yeah, and it also leads into, again, the other two stories, which are going to be Mitch Marner bounce back, because I think people were largely disappointed with the way Mitch Marner played last year. Like, given the offseason he had, the contract, the way that that went down, how much more he got paid than his contemporaries and his comparables, right? Like, you look around the league, and I know people pointed to Tampa and said, well, you can't compare the Tampa guys. Like, I think I can. And you could certainly compare him to players that were signed to Canadian teams. And there's, I think, a little pressure off because people do recognize that with a flat cap that you're not going to get the value that you once thought you were getting on that deal. But if he is a 1A partner with Austin Matthews, then people aren't going to be upset about how much money he's making, because it means the Leafs are going to be one of the best teams in the NHL. And it means that the Leafs are going to be moving out of the first round. But yeah, it's a huge year for Mitch Marner. And we love talking about Joe Thornton because he's new and he's a former star and he's someone that has been linked to this franchise for a long time. But it's the other two guys on that line. Like, that's what matters.
Well, that's why it's hard to envision this scenario where it's like Joe Thornton is so abhorrently awfully bad. He's like falling over himself. He's like falling in front of Austin Matthews while he takes a shot, and he's blocking the shot. Like, how bad does Joe Thornton have to be, especially here early on, where you're making a move to remove him and the trickle-down effect the rest of this roster? Like, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see it. I'm actually, to be honest, with the Thornton stuff, I'm more curious to see how they shelter his minutes in-game and who the guys are that jump up on that top line for a few shifts a game to try and give him a little bit of respite. Number five, I'm going to go quickly, and then we'll take a break, and we'll do some more later. And again, keep texting in, keep tweeting in. Tavares' age 30 season. His points per game dropped last year, and he's largely a guy that does not take on a lot of criticism. But there was a little buzz at the end of the year of this is a guy who needs to be a little bit more dominant. And that if the Leafs' whole identity is, and it has since changed to a degree, like we mentioned, the blue line is more balanced, it's better, that the goaltending needs to be better, that the team defense, the attention to detail, all of those things. But he's the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And his goals dropped last year. He just didn't feel as dominant at times as what you were expecting. Like when the Leafs signed John Tavares, the expectation was that you were getting one of, what, the five best centers in the NHL? And I don't think he's that anymore. And so can you see a little bit of bounce back from Tavares? And I know it seems weird to nitpick that, but if the Leafs are going to win a Stanley Cup, he's going to have to be dominant night in, night out. It isn't going to be good enough to simply be like a solid second line. It really does have to be, in my opinion anyways, a Draisaitl McDavid thing where you've got the two best centers or you've got two of the best centers in your division and in the NHL, and they're doing that in a dominant fashion night in, night out. I don't have doubts that he will be good or that the bar is well above average. I just think that there is going to be an expectation of him this year that has been different than years past. And I am curious to see if he isn't dominating, how people will react.
Well, I think this is a carryover from the playoff thing, right? Like, Austin yep. Matthews has been so damn good. And, like, there was no nitpicking him during those five games against Columbus. Like, that yep. he has that off his back. But John Tavares, not so much. And maybe we're paying attention to different Twitter accounts. I do feel like John Tavares gets, the criticism has already started to mount for him the last couple of years. But, I think he's a great player, and he's still a point-of-game guy, and he's playing with a great trigger man.
Listen to the way you're talking about him right now, even, right? Where it's like, you got to couch everything, and you got to do this whole song and dance, and it's like, oh, it's obvious. Like, him signing here mattered. Him being the captain, him being local, all of these things matter. He's been great. I've said it before that if you're worried about John Tavares, it seems like a foolish concern when it comes to this roster. But now that they are balanced and now that they are clearly positioned to go to a Stanley Cup final, to a Stanley Cup semifinal, they're not going to get there without dominant play from their top two centers. And I think that it is far more given that Austin Matthews is dominant, 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 why I'm bringing him up in this rekindle the best player in the NHL debate, versus what you're going to see from Tavares. That there was a bit of slippage last year. Right now, it's not a concern, but it is something that is going to steamroll, I think, beyond, or snowball beyond, hey, well, maybe he isn't doing X and blah, blah, blah. I think it could get real.
Injury last year, too.
Right. I think it's something to monitor. Let's take a break. Let's talk Habs with Mark Denis. And again, it's so funny. I'm already looking at the text line and seeing people be like, this is wrong. The Habs aren't going to be that good. This is it. And again, this is what makes this so exciting. So let's pivot into rivalry talk or potential rivalry talk with Mark Denis.
It sounds good. The Canadiens color analyst coming up next is Good Show, Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Were the Montreal Canadiens lucky to be invited to the bubble? I would say yes. I would say they were very lucky. Considering their 500 record. What were they, one point up on the Buffalo Sabres, which got them in? Congratulations. Did they exceed expectations by knocking off the Pittsburgh Penguins in the fashion they did? And I guess hanging with the Flyers? Okay. Do we need to put them in the Stanley Cup conversation this year? I don't know. Let's talk to Mark Denis, Canadiens color analyst. Mark, appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show. Pretty good introduction there. Pretty good introduction there, yeah.
Well, dude, I can only speak to the fans I know, I guess, because like I'm not embedded in Canadiens Twitter. And I'm not like you where you have the pulse of the market, but all my Habs friends, the expectations for their team are through the roof. It's like, hey, I'm now in, I think, five different bets that they go further than the Leafs this year. And it's not out of the realm of possibility, obviously. Like, they went further than the Leafs last year. But is there more pressure on this group because of the way things went last season? Is it because of the new acquisitions? Like, it really does feel like for a lot of this fan base, it's, hey, we should be the best team in this division.
I don't know how Well, let's be realistic with our analysis first. I don't know how you can actually identify, as of now, the best team in that division. I think arguably at least four, perhaps five of those teams could contend for number one in the regular season, or call it a 56-game playoff if you want, because that's the feeling it's going to get, it's going to have. But expectations are higher. It's not just a feeling for the fans. It was in the Zoom press conferences for Claude Julien and for Mark Bergevin since the training camp has started. I think most of it has to do with the new acquisition, the new look of the team. Added on top of that, the way they were able to perform in a unlikely, undeserved, unexpected presence in the return to play bubble there in Toronto. And finally, you know, the steps taking forward, although a very small sample size of some of the young players that will be part of this core of, you know, the players are expected to perform. So I think when you, you put all three of these ingredients together, higher expectations come out. But to me, the main reason is depth, quality depth, which the Montreal Canadiens haven't had for so long, that I believe now they may even be the best team in that Canadian division as far as quality depth is concerned.
See, this is what I love about this so much. Like, there's so many different things, but yeah, when hearing you say, hey, we don't know if, or it's too early to say who's the best team in this division.
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out, right?
Sure, we can, but I'm just telling you that it, but we have, and in this market, it's very, very bullish that here's the way that it's playing out in Toronto. If they don't dominate this division, that it's a disappointment. Like, that's the stakes here right now. And when you hear stuff like, yeah, five or six teams feel that way, this is what makes me so optimistic about the potential for this being just an incredible success, is that every fan base is going to care about every single game. There's going to be trash talk between fans. There's going to be probably more animosity between the players. We've talked about Leafs Habs forever, like, you know, this is the 1960s. And really, the rivalry hasn't existed for a very, very long time in terms of it actually having regular stakes. Do you think that this is the year where this actually takes off, where there is a true renewed hatred between the fans and a renewed interest in exactly what the other two teams are doing, where the Habs actually do care, like, what the Leafs are doing? Because a lot of the years it has felt like they have not.
Right. Well, the potential is definitely there. I think the lack of an actual playoff series between the two teams has kind of hampered the chances of that rivalry being renewed. We all understand, especially ones that are close to the beat of those two teams, we understand the importance of those games. We all understand the importance of the Saturday nights between Toronto and Montreal. You know, there's no denying that. As far as the animosity, the fan bases, the players themselves, well, every game's going to matter, starting with tonight. I mean, whoever loses doesn't, you know, it isn't kicked out of the playoffs or anything like that, but it's going to be important, because every single point, it means you're giving up, you know, to somebody that might be in your way to get to the playoffs or for home ice advantage when it's all said and done at the end of this 56-game adventure there. So, yeah, I think you're right. As far as all the fan bases and the trash talk, I don't get so much on Twitter. It's more of a news feed to me, but I do have a feeling that they know that Montreal and Toronto, rightfully so, are expecting to, I wouldn't say dominate. If anybody's expecting any team to dominate, hey, call yourself the Tampa Bay Lightning and go and play against Chicago and Detroit every game. Then maybe you have a chance to dominate. I don't think Montreal or Toronto or anybody in that, what I refuse to call the North Division, and that Canadian division will dominate, yeah.
Yeah, poor Scotia. Scotia. Canadian division. How about we at least give them some give back? Sure. I feel like this Montreal Canadiens team might have a lot of rivalries, because this is going to be part of their identity, right? And adding Anderson, assuming he's healthy, and there's a big gamble that he is, considering the contract extension. But this is the thing, right? Like, they're supposed to be an agitated team that agitates. And that perhaps that permeates not just the Toronto Maple Leafs, but everybody they play. That maybe this is the Leafs are the hated team because of who they are and the fan base, and they're the big brother. But the Montreal Canadiens, is that gonna be part of their identity, trying to be hated?
That'll be really interesting. That's the other thing I'll be keeping a close eye on starting tonight, is what's this new identity? There'll be a feeling of good old identity and DNA with Lehkonen and Byron, the, you know, fleet-footed playing on that fourth line. So less playing time, but still that speedy type of team that doesn't just skate fast but plays fast. But interestingly enough, it's a different makeup for the blue line. I mean, Weber and Sherrod are still there, but Edmondson is big. Romanoff is physical. So there's going to be that physical aspect from the blue line and trying to clear up the front of the net, which has been an issue for the Montreal Canadiens defensively, and try to help Carey Price, who's now helped by a potent backup in Jake Allen. And then the addition up front of well, obviously Josh Anderson, if he stays healthy, but high praises. You know, Columbus is a market I know very well. I still have pretty good connections, but everybody was talking to me about a good player leaving, a player that actually changes the makeup of a shift and of a game when he's on top of it, when he's on top, when he's feeling it. He gets hard on the forecheck. Teammates appreciate that. Opponents notice when he's out there on the ice. So it'll be interesting to see. And it comes with a lot of pressure. You talked about that contract extension. I think it all, you know, it all surprised us to some extent. But the potential to realize and to play up to that, to what's expected, is there for Josh Anderson. A shot, a big body that moves around and that gets up on the forecheck. So that's what they're expecting out of him. And, you know, the other thing with the Montreal Canadiens is now they have a scoring touch. And now remains to be seen how it will translate on the ice, but they have a scoring touch on at least three of their top lines. Well, they don't have the Matthews, the Marner, or the Tavares in their lineup, but now they have a little bit of balance, and that's what they're hoping for, some balanced scoring, at least on the top three lines.
No, I think everybody loves Josh Anderson and what he did a couple of years ago. And it's, yeah, just the question. We haven't seen him in a while. And, yeah, pretty major surgery. And to bank on that, I mean, hopefully it's a good gamble for the Montreal Canadiens. But, yeah, it's been a while. Getting some reinforcements behind Carey Price was super interesting. And the Jake Allen signing, I mean, that was the biggest reason for optimism in the bubble, is just how Carey Price looked against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
What kind of a timeshare are we looking at here? How's that going to look this year?
A game a week. That's what I'm expecting. A game a week. Hopefully, let's not call it load management yet here, but you know, hopefully, planning on giving Carey Price that game off when there's enough time for him to get the rest with the time zone traveling, which is going to be different this season, and or to add in some workouts and some on-ice session with Stefan Witt, his goalie coach, which is something that has lacked, especially, well, the last couple of seasons when Carey Price was healthy. Last year, he was the goalie with the most starts, with the most ice time. Connor Hellebuyck, Freddie Anderson in that mix as well. But obviously, they'll be looking to get him some rest there when now that he's 33. And now that they've, well, I'm not going to say they figured it out, because I could have told them probably a few years back. But now that they've seen how a well-rested, healthy Carey Price can play, you're right, he was really good against Pittsburgh. You know what? He was really good against Philadelphia, too. He was probably one of the better goalies in that return to play, and that's probably encouraging because he hasn't. But let's be honest, I take Carey Price on my team any day of the week, but he hasn't been playing up to the very elite standards that he's gotten us accustomed to back when he was winning Vezina trophies and World Cups. So it'll be interesting to see. I do believe there's a really good season coming out of Carey Price, and that's going to be relying a lot on Jake Allen doing the job as a backup, which the Montreal Canadiens haven't had for a while, huh?
Well, yeah, man. A lot of people were stunned when they went out and got Jake Allen, especially since like his cap hit this year is, I think, $4.5 million, right?
But yeah, it's a lot of money on goalies.
It is a lot of money on goalies, but all I would kind of counter with is, okay, so Carey Price hasn't been the same guy for the past few seasons, but they poll the players last year, right, and they ask them, who's the best goalie in the NHL? And they say Carey Price. And I think that a lot of this sport is still mental. And yep, if you can have a healthy, rested Carey Price in the postseason, the Pittsburgh Penguins did learn that that's one of the scariest things that you can run into. That's one of the worst things that you can run into. So, okay, maybe there's ways that you could have done this a little bit more efficiently. Maybe there's ways that you didn't have to spend as much cap. But if the ends justify the means and you have Carey Price rested, less workload this year in a 56-game season, and he shows up feeling refreshed and great and healthy and mentally in a great spot for the postseason, it's like, yeah, that's that's why Canadians fans are talking trash to me about how they're going to go further than the Leafs, because that's the thing that's like more terrifying. There's nothing scarier, to, in my opinion, as of right now on paper, than facing that in the first round of the playoffs, especially if you had a good year and you're feeling good about yourself, and then you got to face, like, gross. Don't want to see it. Like, really hope that it's not Toronto that sees it. So last one for me before we go. Montreal really does have some exciting new players, right? Toffoli comes in, Anderson comes in, Alexander Romanov getting a lot of hype. Which one of these guys are you most excited for?
Well, I'll be keeping a close eye on how Anderson reacts to the big contract, a different market, huge, humongous expectations for the team that he's joined. But Romanov is one that intrigues me. I would like to, at some point, this is no disrespect to Joel Edmondson, but I would like to see, once he goes maybe, I don't know, once around the batting order and Romanov is feeling it on a given night, to see him getting some extra minutes above Edmondson, hopefully, that will start on the second pairing next to Petrie. I don't think Romanov will ever get into the Shea Weber, Jeff Petrie type of ice time this season, but it'll be interesting to see. And everything I've seen so far, it's gotten me hyped too. I like what Romanov brings. There's a little bit of offense. He's a 2021 bigger body, strong, that can move. And he doesn't shy away from being physical. And the most impressive thing, and you guys, I'm sure, will agree, you guys have seen hockey and learned about hockey players coming over for the first time. Yeah, well, he's been hardworking. He's been hardworking in the gym, in practices. He was around the team during the return to play in the bubbles. And he's been very well liked by his teammates, although English is not a strong suit yet, for everything that he's been able to bring. So I think that gives us an indication. I mean, I think we can't have too high of expectation for a defenseman as a rookie, but it'll be interesting to see how what he brings and how he can get that accomplished this season. It'll be really interesting to see.
Hey, man.
Intriguing player.
Yeah. You're not getting the trash talk on Twitter because you're just keeping it as a news feed, so I'll give you right now. Leafs are going to beat the wheels off them tonight. Like, they're going to start. They're going to set the tone. It's going to be great. I really hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it. And then, you can tweet something later like, long season. It's a long season. Don't panic because, yeah, this one's right in the bag. This is a Leafs win.
Yeah. They're supposed to. They have to. They got the firepower. There you go. I can't trash talk. I'm not good. I analyzed it in front of me. Hey, I wore a mask for my playing career. I was well protected behind that mask.
Hey, man, thanks for doing this today, and the analysis was sharp. Enjoy the game tonight, buddy.
All right, thanks for having me on. Enjoy the season.
Take care, pal.
Mark Denis, Canadiens color analyst. Yeah, it was George St. Pierre in it with the trash talk. It's like, that's not me. That's not my thing. Yeah.
We'll see. That was GSP's trash talk throughout his entire career. We'll see. I was like, all right, yeah, we will. And that was a good thing, though, is that we did see every single time GSP victories. I think that this is, again, it's going to be really fun, but that isn't fun when I do think about the potential of, healthy, rested, short season, Carey Price, sprint to the finish. Yeah, and you know what? You can say that about... I would say that this division, I'm trying to think, because I don't know of all of the other ones offhand, but when you're talking about the potential for goalies to get hot in the postseason and which division has the guys that you're most afraid of...
There's four of them.
Well, I just think that the scariest two reside here in Hellebuck and Price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and then Markstrom, when he's healthy, has looked amazing. And you've seen Anderson at his best. But yeah, man. No, that was the whole thing about that Penguins series and previewing it and laughing at the Canadians that they got into the bubble. But you're like, I know Carey Price had, what, barely over 900 save percentage this season. But if he's Carey Price, anything can happen. Guess what? Anything happened. They beat Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And that, like, if you can protect him, if you can get him into the playoffs fully healthy, that's the biggest reason for optimism.
Sure. I'm still scared of Carey Price, and he looked awesome in the postseason last year. And I think your point about them being the team people hate to play against could be very, 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 very real. We got enough time here, so I'm going to squeeze this in. And it relates to one of the texts. I'm actually going to go to this text right now. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? It's on Hyman. I've lost it. I've lost the Hyman text. Do you see it?
No, I don't even know what. I'm sure you have the gist of it. I don't know what the question is. Is Zach Hyman good? I mean, he's got back-to-back 20-goal seasons. How does he do on the shutdown line? Does the 20-goal season continue with Alexander Kerfoot and Ilya Mikheyev playing on the same line? Like, that would be super impressive. Problem. It would be, you know what it would be? It would be the Tyler Bozak being a Phil Kessel creation thing and then not. That would be cool.
Right. The gist of the question, and I'm sorry that I have forgotten your name, that I have missed your question, and that I lost it. But the gist of the question is that Zach Hyman is coming off an incredible year. Mm-hmm. He was awesome. Right. Luke from Wellington. Thank you, Lance, for bailing me out. Says that he was a point-a-game player last year. Almost. Had this incredible year, and now they're dropping him down to this matchup center. So, storyline, I think I'm at now number 6, is contract year for Hyman. Mm-hmm. Last year, yeah, we were talking about this guy as one of the most important players on the team, and this year he feels kind of a little lost in the shuffle because the guy absorbing all the headlines on his line is Alex Kerfoot, and for the right reason, which is that he plays the more important position, but I would argue that he is not the more important player on that line. Zach Hyman is the best player on the third line. He's entering a contract year. If his point total goes down because he's not able to play with the guys he's used to playing with, is that going to affect anything for his future? Is he going to want that for his future? Like, we make a lot of assumptions about that guy because of how he plays, right? He plays really hard. And if you put him in any situation, he's the Energizer Bunny. He basically gets, you basically don't talk about him because what is there to say? He shows up every single game. He's the hardest working player on the team, I would say, night in, night out. He's basically the epitome of what this team wants to have when it comes to compete and toughness and all of those buzzwords that we talked about in storyline number one. Like, it's why he falls so far down the list. But Zach Hyman is really important to this team. Really, really good player. Contract year. If he becomes one of the best shutdown wingers in this division, maybe the best shutdown winger in this division, what happens? What happens if he starts getting those Selke votes? I don't even know how the awards work this year. I guess it's all the same. I hadn't really thought about it until now. But yeah, like, you win the Selke based on, I guess, whatever. He's in Selke nominations.
Before he's finished 25th and 19th.
Right, I'm saying high up, higher up, higher up the ballot. Legitimate, we're talking about him all season long. And again, he's going to be looked at in this market anyways very, very differently because he will be matching up against the Connor McDavids of the world, right? Like, it's going to be you versus the top line every single night, him being the guy that people hate to play against, getting in people's faces. I think we're going to start talking about what his contract looks like, how important he is to the team, whether or not he is a core piece, whether he is someone who you can end up losing. Those things are going to start to begin. For the first time outside of just, wow, this guy is exceeding expectations, or the other conversation before that was whether or not he could score enough tap-ins playing on the top line, there are going to be long, meaningful, and frequent Zach Hyman conversations.
Dude, here's what I'll say. Is it, I mentioned it, back-to-back 20-goal seasons, and he had 21 and 37 points in just 51 games last year. If he's putting up 20 goals this year, playing alongside Alexander Kerfoot and Ilya Mikheyev, and continuing his role on the penalty kill, well, I mean, not 20 goals, because they're only playing 56 games, but if he does put up 20 goals, I mean, he put up 21 and 51 last year, like, yeah, he's too expensive for this team. Like, I don't know what happens to him. let's take a break and talk to our pal, Colby Armstrong of the NHL and Sportsnet, former NHL forward, friend of the show next. It's a good show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Broadcaster.
Yeah, he's, I guess.
Former player.
Yeah.
Advocate.
Reality show contestant. Yeah. All those things.
Yeah.
Am I on?
Famous for a bad
interview. Am I on? Yeah.
I was just waiting for you guys to finish up that awesome intro. Yeah.
You got a long resume, buddy. You got a lot of people know you from a lot of different things.
Esquire.
Might I add a substitute teacher to the mix? I add, you know, a lot of things. Wardrobe, makeup consultant, hair design.
Yeah. Hype man.
Hair design.
Hype guy. I might also add set designer, lighting professional on there as well.
Christmas light hanger. you got a lot on your plate. Okay, actually, let's start with that, because no offense, but I can't think of anybody who would be rattled more by the studio saying, hey, buddy, you got to set up your own lights, you got to do your own makeup, you got to do your own hair. Like, if you were single, you'd be screwed. You know that, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, and you know, I'm going to be fine. Like, I'm going to get through it, guys.
Okay, sorry, just the tone of your voice.
Anxiety. Yeah,
I know.
You need an assistant. Well, I mean, yeah. The funniest thing I've heard about you recently was JD telling me his interaction with you, and you were like, oh, was I supposed to be on yesterday, bud? Like, knowing where you're supposed to be, what your schedule is.
I have no clue. Like, I get up, I get the kids ready, I get them set up online, I get their school, I'm pulling out folders, I'm firing through book bags, I'm running kid to kid, kid to kid, switching classrooms, Google Meet thing, classroom. I don't know how I'm doing it. My wife's on Zoom calls with her work. I'm designing a set in my basement. I'm getting it going. Like, I just, you know, there's just a lot going on. And then JD texts me, and I was like, did I miss something? Like, I'm in a panic. I'm in a full panic there.
Oh, man. I already made this joke, because Savvy, like Mark Savard, our buddy, is doing the same thing where he's being the teacher. And I was like, what are you teaching, gym? Like, and I want to know, like, you know, it's like he's got a whistle and high shorts and he's just waiting for his kids. He's like, all right, step out. Let's go. Let's run some laps. Like, what is Professor Armstrong? What is Professor Armstrong's teaching method? What's your strongest class that you're teaching the kids right now?
Right now, and this will change if we continue this for much longer, but I feel like I'm doing okay in math. And I know a lot of people have had issues with math, but we're at a level right now where I can contribute, you know?
Attaboy. Because you're a nice.
So grade one.
Yeah, first grade math, I'm dominating. Yeah. And I can get it. Now, my son,
10 minus 7, no problem.
Fourth grade. Yeah, my son's in fourth grade. That's a whole other story. I go in there, I'm like, I don't know, man. You got to ask your mom.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah.
I think that is going on in a lot of houses around the world right now.
Dude, the math stuff. Yeah. I'd be ace in the grade one quiz, just like you. Yeah. 2 + 2, 4. I got that. I got that down. No big deal. Kind of nailed it. Kind of ran through the whole exam. Anything above, I would say, grade 4-ish range. Once we start getting into division, I think that it's over for me. It's lights out. I'm folding up camp. Like, that's it. That's the limit of my math.
Totally. You know how you do stuff just in your head, too? Like, you know how you do stuff just in your head, and you're just like, okay, you know it? Well, you can't just know it. You have to, like, do it a certain way at school, right? So it's like, I don't know the way they're doing it. Like, dude, just do it this way. This way works. That's the answer I got. Here, I'll write it down for my kid, and he'll be like, Dad, we don't do it that way. And I'm like, I can't help you. I don't know. This is how I do it. This is in the land of Colby Armstrong. This equation equals that. We got the same answer. Here we go. Right?
No,
maybe. Thank God hockey's back. Hockey's back, boys. Let's go.
And now you're set. You're going to have no problem with Corsi percentage. Like, you're on it. You're all over that this year.
Yeah, you're going to be great. Analytics guy. Big analytics guy.
Hey, you know what? I do think analytics on top of playing a big role as it is, but I just thinking in my head, like, how much, you know, some of these tendencies, weaknesses, analytics stuff is going to come into play with just playing these teams over and over and over, especially this year. Like, I don't know. Like, I just think in matchups and preparation, like, I'm thinking of all this stuff, right? And I find the more you think about stuff, the more you're wrong. So, hey, I could be wrong, but
I kind of think that this year is just because of the strangeness of the setup, guys, how, you know, with playing in your division the whole time, the preparation, playing teams back-to-back and different situations that we're going to see, just the preparation on the team side, the coaching side, for these players will just be that much bigger, I think, in facing these teams and giving different looks, right? Like your power play breakout. I know everyone does like the drop back play, I'm sure, but just different schemes inside the zone on power play, breakouts, 5-on-5, all this kind of stuff. You're constantly going to have to kind of, you know, change it up. I think the coaches will be really challenged this year just because of that. I know everyone watches video, and you still, because the Leafs are going to go out and play, like, let's say San Jose during a normal regular season in a game, they're going to see the video and prepare. But I think it just adds that much more to it, in throwing some tricks at some teams that you're going to see like almost every week.
Well, so does that lead you to believe that we're going to see some weird results and everybody predicting who's going to win each division and the order could be totally upset because weird stuff could happen, or is it the opposite?
Well, I don't know. Like, the thing is, you look at some teams that dominate in their division and can't win outside their division. There's teams like that during the year, and it all kind of adds up to the end. But we could see it. I think we could see some teams, you know, fare better with style of play, with who they're playing against as well in their division. So, you know, that's why for me, I don't know, like, for the North Division, even the game tonight, like, I like the way Montreal plays. I like the way they're built. I like the guys they got. I like their back end. I like, obviously, Carey Price. You know, they've added some good guys. They're fast team. They're tough to play against. They can defend really well. So I think they're going to be a really tough team to play against all year long in this division.
This is how we know you're American, because you called it the North Division. It's the Canadian Division.
The Canadian Division, yeah. I wrote it down in proper form on my papers.
Attaboy.
I'm a professional.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
You're a big pro. You got dossiers, you got binders, folders, it's all organized. No, I'm sure.
Yeah, particular.
Yeah. No, it's very tight, tight ship, tight operation that you're running over there. So, yeah, man, this is actually, I guess maybe we'll start there, is you're right. The matchups are going to be interesting. Like, we're going to have to read into this pretty early, the adjustments that teams are going to try to pull. I will admit that the Canadiens thing actually does scare me a little, just because, yeah, more and more hockey people keep talking about how they're going to match up against a team like the Leafs. And to some extent, it does make sense to me, right? Like, they are going to test Toronto almost right away with a bit of a heavier game. And we're going to see kind of out of the gate whether or not the Leafs can adjust to that, whether or not that suits them. We're going to probably have some takeaways pretty quickly here, but what have you heard from players that you're talking to, like guys you're talking to around the league, about how they feel about just the schedule, the way that they're playing one another, the travel? Like, are guys as excited for this as we are? Is it dependent on the division? Like, what's the general sense that you're getting?
I kind of get, just like from talking to some guys, it's going to be, everyone said, oh, this is going to be so different, this is going to be so weird. And you know, that you might kind of walk by that and just say, okay, of course it is. This is different. This is kind of a strange setup, but we're getting hockey back. But you got to think about what the actual life of a hockey player is very basic. You come to training camp, you play your games, your schedule, you travel, you stay in nice hotels, blah, 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 blah. And it's all set up for you. And now here they just kind of restructured the whole league. You get a 10-day camp and here we go of straight games and, for 116 days of straight hockey every single night we're going to get as fans, and you know, playing every second day and just bam, 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 and the same teams over and over. So it kind of throws, I think, the player's mind, you know, out of it a little bit, just to kind of prepare for, like, well, like, we've never done this before. They truly are creatures of habit, in the way they prepare and just the way it's always been. It's always been. So that's the one takeaway that I kind of get from the players and talking to them, that it's just going to be so different. But I think once they get going and we get some of these games and some of these, you know, games that I think in the past that we've seen, rivalry games that have been maybe, you know, like this isn't what it used to be. And I don't think it ever will be what it used to be, but I think we'll start to see some of that kind of, you know, the fire inside of these divisions just, you know, really blast off. And I think it's going to be exciting from a fan's point of view when you get to watch, you know, your team, say you're a Leafs fan, you know, play Montreal how many times, and, you know, play these teams how many times, with and some renew some rivalries as well. So it's bound to happen just the way it's set up, which is super exciting.
Yeah, man. I can't wait to see which teams hate each other more, you know? Like, you're going to be facing all these teams over and over and over again, but you know there's going to be a couple around the league where we're really going to feel it. Like, there was a little bit of that last year with Edmonton-Calgary where you thought, oh, my God, this is I missed this so much, and that became must-see TV. And I can't wait to feel that around the league with a few different teams where you go, this is it. Like, these guys got into a thing, and now they're playing a night later. You know, like, it's
exactly.
They didn't have any room. They're going at each other right away, again, and it could be fireworks, and that there's going to be that buzz around the league. So, yeah, dude, that's unbelievably exciting.
And we get it right away out of the gate. I mean, even here in Pittsburgh, right. Like, boom, the puck's going to drop. They're going to play the Flyers, bing, bing, two out of the gate. And, I mean, we're seeing that all around the league. And I think, you know, if we are in this, you know, this setup that they've got, and we get hockey back, how exciting is that if you're a fan, honestly, to see these teams? Like, you know, it's like Philly here in Pittsburgh, Washington Capitals rivalry, and then, like, what else? Like, the Islanders have come on, they beat the Penguins in the play. Like, I mean, there's just, it's going to keep going and going. So,
dude,
every night, every game, you're going to be intrigued, you're going to be curious, I think.
And what about the nights, or what about the back-to-backs that all of a sudden you lose? Like, I was thinking about this morning, how when I looked at the schedule, you see for the Leafs, right? Two of their first three games are against the Sens. They play Friday, Saturday night against the Senators. Imagine they lose both those games. Like, imagine the Leafs lose both of those games to the Senators, or anybody loses two games in a row to it. It's just, the amount of trash talking that's going to happen with fans, the way that it's going to spiral in the media, the way that we're going to talk about it, the way that we're going to analyze it. Like, it'll be three games into a season. And I know, again, it's short. So when we were doing Baseball Man, and Benny, like, jump in on this. Remember how long it took us to kind of figure out what the early season was? Like, everything was so important. And you go, man, we don't really know how the math works on this, because, again, we're not practicing every day like you on how much a win is worth, you know, and how hard it is going to be to get into the playoffs. Like, that feeling out period of the urgency of this against those teams, especially, again, if you drop back-to-back against somebody, it's going to feel
crazy.
You'll
also be able to make up games, too, because you're playing everybody
later
that you're chasing. Like, there's no...
But then they'll matter so much more.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and like, I just think back to the lockout year, my last year. I was in Montreal. What was that, 12-13? And that shortened season, we come back, and it was honestly a sprint. It was a sprint, and I think it's going to be exciting that way, like you just said, JD, from the fans' point of view, just because everything is so much more magnified. And, I mean, it was awesome. We got off, I think we won like seven games in a row or six or seven in a row out the start of the season, which is huge in that shortened season. I mean, that's like, boom, you take a chunk of games right off the table with wins, huge. And that's what's going to be this year. That's what it's going to be with these teams. And then those magnified games, as you're trying to track down teams and you play them back to back, you know, you're 4 points behind a team and you're going to get a shot at them how many more times? I mean, it is going to be magnified. It's going to be a sprint, and the teams are going to feel the pressure. You know, these teams that are, you know, supposed to be good and supposed to get it, you know, win, and you get off to a little bit of a slow start, that just magnifies it that much bigger. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the start and see how some of these teams and the predictions and who's supposed to be winning and who's supposed to be leading their divisions and where they kind of sit maybe after like the first 10 game quick sprint out of the blocks or what everyone's looking like.
Well, you mentioned that lockout shortened season, and that was the season, that was the Nazem Kadri breakout season for the Leafs. And part of it was that he got that jump start with the AHL season and playing competitive hockey before everybody else was. But he's also younger, and you mentioned it, creatures of habit, and guys that are veterans in this league being totally thrown for a loop makes me feel like the jam schedule, the guys getting thrown off their routines, the teams with good youth are at an advantage.
Yeah, and that was the talk coming back to the bubble, I think, as well. Just talking to some guys and, you know, who's going to do well and what to expect when they came back for the playoffs in the bubble. And it's like, man, the young guys are going to be ready to go. So, you know, there's something to be said about youth and, you know, that kind of goofy youthfulness that you don't kind of think of, overthink things. So, you know, I think there is something to that, and it's legs too, right? I think, you know, I've watched some of these some of these inter-squad games online that we've been able to catch up on, and some of these teams, and it's different because it's a inter-squad game, you know, red versus white, whatever teams it is, and you know, there's no hitting, and it's kind of a little bit like, you know, beer leaguey, but I can see it being just, you know, a little sloppy, but the guys that have those legs, the guys that have that jump, I think we'll notice, quite a bit, big difference for teams that have those youthful legs, have enough guys that can kind of provide that for their team.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be an advantage. I don't know. I'm trying to avoid reading into too many things I thought would be massive stories or massive advantages when, dude, we did like months of shows during the pandemic about the Leafs coming back. Yeah. And how because they were young and because they got to reset mentally and because they didn't have the media there, it was like, oh, they're going to be a whole different team. And then it was like, nope, same thing happened as it always does, which is a team that played hard and disciplined, punched them in the mouth and beat them. And so it's like, yeah. Okay, yeah, all right, the schedule is going to be condensed. I think that there's logic to younger players having that ability or having that, but there's also going to be dudes who understand when to monitor themselves, how not to burn out, basically treat their bodies the right way to get through the regular season. I don't know. I think that there's kind of, you can play that both ways. But this brings me to Jumbo. And you talked about the pressure early on and how, dude, yeah, if the Leafs lose two of those games to Ottawa, three games in, they got all these expectations. Everybody's talking about playing with more discipline and playing with more consistency and toughness and all this stuff, right? All the buzzwords. There's a ton of pressure on this team this year. Like a ton. And you and I had a phone call, like, I want to say 2-3 months ago, and you were sort of gushing about the idea that this guy is going to take a lot of pressure off of that room. And, you know, again, to reference Savvy's second time, but he had a great line the other day where he said, well, if he's so good in the room, why don't we just leave him there? And I was like, okay, that's, you know, there's a point to be made about that. But, dude, how do you think this is going to play with him? Like, what is it going to be like for those players to have him around? How much of that heat do you think he's going to absorb? Because, like, already it sort of feels like a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and I think he's going to be so good for the guys, especially in this condensed season and the magnification of every game or, you know, every two games that you play. So, like, first of all, I think he's big because he's nastier than people give him credit. Like, he's a big guy. He has an edge to him. He's a little bit nasty. He can be nasty. And so they get that out of him, obviously, as well. He can make plays. He's a big body guy. He hangs on to pucks. Leafs love that about the game. But I think, like, we've got a sampling of his personality. We've seen him singing, through his career anyways. And then lately I've seen him singing Britney Spears in Switzerland, it appears. He's saying he doesn't have any pressure, man. I got no pressure. I don't feel anything. Like, he's just, like, the coolest guy ever. And so you've got these young guys, big contracts, massive expectations. The Leafs, I think, did get better as well with the guys that they did add. From certain standpoints as well. And when it does in a short and compacted season, everything is magnified. To have a guy like that with the, much guys kind of look up to him and the presence that he has inside that room or with that team on a day-to-day basis, to have that kind of character and that kind of personality and also that kind of presence, I think is going to be huge on top of, you know, what he could provide, his ability, right? So, yes, he's older. We think about speed. I don't know if we say that about Jumbo, although I think he's deceivingly quicker than he looks. But a guy that I think brings a ton more than, you know, what is just his name on the paper, what he can bring to this group of guys in their way of feeling and thinking every day, because he's like the dude of the NHL, you know?
Oh yeah. No, I just think it's
huge for the group day to day, with the personality and style kind of that he exudes with this team.
Yeah. Like, that off ice stuff is the thing I have the least amount of questions about. Yeah. He's going to be great. He's going to absorb a lot of the oxygen and yeah, he's going to be thrown right into the maelstrom right away when Sheldon Keefe
like
is trying to create a new
smile every
story.
Day, his smile yeah. every day, his laugh. I mean,
it's an infectious
threat, his presence, like, he's a big guy. He's Jumbo Joe Thornton. I mean, it's incredible for him to be, inserted into this dressing room with these guys to have that. It's just incredible. And then you know, a lot of talk of, you know, the Leafs toughness. I think Jumbo provides that as well. He can be a big, nasty dude. And as well as adding, you know, Simmons and a Bogosian who plays that way as well. And, you know, Bogosian can still skate. So, you know, I know I heard Shanahan mention, you know, they had guys like Pollock there in previous years, and obviously a tough guy, but Bogosian can move the puck and skate and get up ice. And he's a thoroughbred up and down the way he moves. So, they added some guys that can help him and play inside of their game with that speed, but have that edge to them as well.
Yeah, man. And I'm okay. So here's what I think about Thornton. All the stuff in the room, like hearing you get excited mm-hmm. about it, I have to imagine that those guys are the same way. And I don't know. It seems like, not to make it weird, but that the Marners and the Matthews and the way they gravitated to Marlowe already, and they seem to love to have an adult around, like that they seem to really gravitate towards those guys who have been there, who've done it. And who are respected around the league. And so that part I don't, like Ben just said, he doesn't have any doubts, right? Here's what else I don't have doubts about. That offensive zone draws, especially early in the season after this guy's played in Switzerland and he's feeling good about himself, when they get an offensive zone draw and he's setting up, that it's going to look fine and it's going to be great, right? Leafs have puck possession, Thornton's zipping it around, he's going to look everything like Joe Thornton and it's going to excite the crap out of people. What I'm curious about is when the puck goes down the other way, and he's got to be basically playing in transition and skating up and down the ice, trying to keep up with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, how that's going to look and how many minutes he's going to end up playing and how many of those situations he's going to play. Like, I know it's 56 games, and I get that a lot of it is going to be how he's set up situationally, like I mentioned, but how are we going to know, or how are you going to know if maybe it's a little bit too much for him to chew being on that top line?
And that may be. And that may be through parts of this season that he has to, you know, get bumped around, or the ice time needs to be monitored and some guys need to be moved around. And that, I mean, I think that, you know, that could be a normal situation. But I know playing against Thornton, he can get a lot done by not moving that much, to be honest with you, as well in the offensive zone. I mean, he turns his back to you in when he has a puck, and it's he can. I mean, his neck, he's like an owl, the way he can spin his head around and find guys. He can just stand there, and you can't get the puck from him. So he can get a lot done by not moving too much. He's just a crafty, smart player, and to have other guys that are crafty and smart around him, and Matthews and Marner, we get to get a peek at that and see how that'll break down in transition, where I think, like you said, JD, there may be some questions about his speed through the neutral zone and attack off the rush, but a guy that's found a way to get it done every year. And I think playing with those guys in the offensive zone is exciting for me, just because of the fact that he can, you know, take guys on his back, and he can find guys, you know, incredibly well with his vision and playmaking ability. So he can get a lot done just by being his crafty self, and his playmaking ability can take over from there, playing with, guys that are going to, you know, take up some attention as well. You know, Matthews and Marner, those guys, you know, draw attention. So it might even give him a little bit more room. And that's always trouble when Joe Thornton has room down below the goal line.
Yeah, it's not that he's also, I guess, in a pressure situation, but one that I think it's going to be difficult to fail because those other guys are so good. And Matthews is playing at such a level.
I also think he's going to remind people of Sundin behind the net, man. And that's going to be like, oh, right. Like, it's like having another huge dude who can play below the net and who can turn his back on guys, and it's hard to get the puck off him. And people are going to get those little flashbacks if you're my age, and you're like, oh my God, that's like Sundin, and he's setting dudes up. And I think it's, there's a reason why the hype train is getting out of control.
You know, you talk about his age, though, but like, he's got to feel like a kid in a candy store, you know, and he already has 100%. That kind of personality. But just, you know, playing with these guys, how long does it last? I think that's a fair question. Can he keep the pace with them? Does it have to get switched up throughout the season here, and, you know, monitor it and balance it and move some guys around. But, I think we can see long stints of him being in that position. And, I think much like everyone else, just to see what it'll look like, it'll be incredible to see Joe playing with these, you know, these kids that are, you know, the stars of the team, and see the beard flying down, the wizard beard flying down the wing with them. So I think if you're a Leafs fan, I think it's pretty exciting to have him, you know, Ontario kid, come back home. Like Simmons as well, Ontario kid coming back. It's nice to see those guys in the lineup coming back in Ontario and a team they probably grew up, watching all the time.
Yeah, that part's great. It's finally happened. But like I was saying, Austin Matthews is the guy, and he's going to be the guy, and he scored almost 50 goals, and if he had been, able to complete an 82-game season, he would have had 50 goals. He's apparently gotten even better in the offseason. He's lost a little bit of weight. We had this conversation about, will this conversation start happening again about him being the best player in the NHL? Where are you on that?
Well, you're reading things about his interest in, I think it was Shanahan again, an interest in his 200th game, he said. And sometimes it just takes guys that, have been able to do what they've been able to do for so long. And it just takes them to kind of want to do it and play that way. So, well, Matthew's always good. Stick lifts, stealing pucks, picking pucks off guys, like really, really crafty at that. But the attention and like the desire to, be that guy, I think is a huge step. I like the fact that he's down a little bit in weight. I think we'll notice a difference in that with him and movement this year is going to be incredible. The way he can shoot, I mean, like you said, the pace that he was on, and I think he's probably, him and Ovechkin are kind of guys they talk about this year, who's going to score the most goals. He's right there every year now. He's that guy. It's incredible. I think this could be a big year just in a step, I think, from a overall game aspect of Austin Matthews. And, that's big for the Leafs, right? That's huge for the Leafs when you got your best player that's coming in and do that.
And you mentioned
killing penalties.
That's what I was going to get to. It's like we've done this analyzing of this team and the storylines going into the season now for the entirety of the week. Like we're almost into our last half hour of the shows before the start of the season. And yeah, he's going to be playing some PK minutes. And I don't know if it's just, hey, taking a face off and getting the hell off the ice once they fire the puck down the ice, but they're giving him that responsibility. And we've heard from numerous people about, hey, how, like, you can really jumpstart a guy's 200-foot game by giving him that. It feels like that's what's happening here.
Yeah, and there's been lots of talk in the last few years, and I know it kind of, Keith has kind of changed that, but, like, his ice time, right? So you get your power play, your 5-on-5, situational play, and then you get this penalty kill ice time added, and I feel like he's a guy, you talk about his with his weight down a little bit lighter, a little bit probably more ability, feeling faster, I'd mention. But his ability to be involved in all aspects of the game is a spark, just a real spark for a guy like him. So anytime you're more involved in guys like him, you see the ice time, go up a little bit. You see him being more involved in every situation and a little bit more attention to that stuff, I think is good for a guy like him that, wants to take it on, but, puts it on himself to be in that spot and want to do the job. So a lot of pride comes into it. And like you said, Benny, you get put in those situations. There's pride in killing a penalty. So he's going to have that defensive shutdown, penalty kill aspect in the kind of sizzling in the back of his brain, throughout the game. So that's going to be there for him. And, we'll see the steps that he takes this year, but that, Austin Matthews is what's the ceiling for him really? Once he gets, these dimensions to his game that, I think, people can see or, people expect maybe, but it's going to keep going for him.
Yeah. The penalty kill is cool until tonight he's out there and Shea Weber.
Yeah. Don't block shots.
Slap shot.
Do not.
And then you see Austin Matthews in the shooting lane and I'm like, maybe not. Maybe not. Like, throw up the flamingo leg and get out of the way, buddy, because I really don't need you blocking shots. I need you putting them behind Carey Price's shoulder. And okay, man, like, cool. I want him to be a more complete player. I think everybody does, and he does too. And the weight loss, maybe the conditioning is better. It's something that's been talked about in the past. And whether he can sustain the course of regular season and all these back-to-backs, that's cool. And he's already, I think, a pretty good defensive player. Like, he's a little underrated with the way he can take the puck off of people's sticks. I've always wanted him to play a heavier game. I always wish that he was someone who, when we're talking about Thornton and he's putting his back to people and going behind the net, that Matthews could do a little bit more of that. And I don't know if losing the weight helps that and or what the trade-off is. He doesn't hit anyways. He's never hit. And I guess the expectation for him too now, especially given that he's had some shoulder problems, that maybe it's even stupid to want him to be that guy. But, yeah, he's one of the stories of the season. And what we talked about with him in terms of, the goal-scoring stuff and the best player debates is it actually just reminds me a lot about Sidney Ovechkin, where it's – everybody acknowledges that McDavid is the better player. I think if you're a hockey fan, you know that. But we've always wondered, like, how much more valuable is goal scoring, right? Like, how much if you're scoring this much, if you're scoring this many more goals than your competitor and you start to rack up wins, or if you're on the better regular season team the way that it was between those two guys, then you have those conversations, right? And I think that could be a fun one this year, is those two guys going head-to-head, a svelte Matthews scoring a bunch of goals, McDavid doing his typical McDavid things, and us talking about how close they are. You know, that's fun. And that brings me to Sid. And okay, go ahead. Sorry, jump in there.
I think Connor's had his criticism of his, you know, quote unquote 200 foot game as well. So, you know, I think they're both kind of in a similar spot in that regard, with talks a little bit about that. And obviously both super elite offensive players, but you know, there's always been that kind of lingering thing. Like, can they give a little bit more in the all around game? And then, you know, I guess that takes you to Crosby.
Well, that's the thing is it, even as early as, or I don't know, even last year, and I know it's weird because they got bounced by Montreal, but I've always believed that, okay, McDavid has taken over as the quote-unquote best player that you would want throughout a regular season or that you take and all this different stuff. But if you needed one game and you weren't picking goalies, that you'd still pick Sidney Crosby for that reason, right? Like, you just know what you're getting in every facet. And we just saw a year where Aaron Rodgers was rejuvenated for the Packers and he had an MVP season. LeBron James won a championship in the bubble. And I wouldn't say that people were writing those guys off, but people had questions about both of them. And now we got Sid. How old is Sid now? Like, is he 34?
Yeah.
He is 30. I think so, yeah. He'll be 34 in August.
Yeah. Okay, so he's 33 years old. What do you think the season looks like for him? Is this a little bit of an FU season? Like, obviously, you talk to the guy, his approach, it's a shorter year. They had the disappointing exit last season. There's talks about the Penguins being done. Like, I think it's a really interesting year for them. And it won't be seen as much in Canada, but I think they will kind of be the American team that we track the most.
Yeah, and well, they're in the division that I think everyone's given the most chatter with, just because of strength of teams and consistency of strength, the teams in there. But, you know, we just did a season preview for them, and you talk about last year and the loss. Malkin's brought it up several times at camp about how upset they were about the way it ended last year and going into this year. They've overhauled the coaching staff except for Mike Sullivan. They got rid of Matt Murray. They traded him. Hornquist, who's a big voice in the locker room, full energy guy, he's gone. And you look at Sid with Gensel. And then he's kind of always had a rotating winger on that side. It's Dom Simone. It was Hornquist. It was tastes of this and that, you know, all the time. And that's why the intriguing thing is they've got Kapanen back in there now, who's come back to the Penguins. But a guy I think they're really excited about, his speed, his tenacity. He does have that swagger. He has, that energy that can play up there on the wing with him whenever he does get back into their lineup here. I think he's still waiting to get going. But I think a guy, when you put him on the wing with Sid, with Gensel, two real crafty, smart players. And, I think that's going to be a really nice line for them. But there is a chip on their shoulder for sure. I think there's a chip on their shoulder for the way things finished off, how much time is left with their core group. And, with that, there's a few players that have merged in there, but still the big three with, Malkin, Crosby, and Letang, and what they can get done with the surrounding pieces there. So, I think there's a little bit of anger in the Pens locker room. There's a little bit a desire to kind of bounce back. And then there was a shakeup too. So it's something that kind of adds up to, you know, keep an eye on the Penguins. I think you're right, JD. I think keep an eye on what could possibly be with a team that's motivated the way they are right now. With, you talk about age, with, you know, with the clock kind of ticking on the major pieces of this team.
Mm-hmm. Professor, always
hey,
a
boys.
Pleasure.
I love talking hockey. We got hockey, boys. Tonight's the night.
Yeah, I know.
It's on.
Good,
oh, you're not
on
in the commercial.
Yeah. It's on.
It's on.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Oh, wow. That was your audition? That's why they didn't put you in?
It's on.
Yeah. They couldn't have Skyped you in for the commercial?
It would have been me, like, logging my kid onto a classroom with a coffee in my hand. I would have turned to the camera and I would have, it's on.
Nice. Yeah. Maybe they can cut that in for the next one. Missy Bud, this was great.
I've been wearing for 3 days. Yeah, let's go.
Those are on too long. Those have been on for too long.
All right,
pal.
Enjoy,
talk to you
boys.
Soon.
Enjoy.
You too, buddy.
Yeah, I'll talk
See
to you
buddy.
Guys.
Colby Armstrong. Always a pleasure. Been too long. Loved it.